Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for Fight Night Picks with your host, Frank
and Matt
Allen.
Big time fights coming up this weekend. UFC Vegas 30, headlined by Ciryl Gane, taking on the man himself, Alexander Volkov. As always, one half of your hosting duo, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at Craig Allen FNP. With me to my left, to your right, Matt Allen. You can always find him on the respective socials at Matt Allen FNP and at Matt Allen FNP. We had a wild weekend last weekend. Now, a lot of people were skeptical. They were like, hey, Craig, where are you going? Where is this wilderness? You kept it so secretive. It was Fundy National Park, and I had a lovely time. But the biggest winner of last weekend was the Sam Squanch shirt, so I had to bring it back out for the videos this weekend. And Matt, ultimately, we ended up going 8-4. Respectable weekend. I was able to hit on one of the big underdogs of the weekend with Nikolai Negomirianu. So I'm going to pat myself on the back with that one. But overall, we have a really big card coming up this weekend. Like I said, a couple of heavyweights. It's the second card in the month that we've had heavyweights headline. And we also have heavyweights in the co-main event. A little bit of a mix and match situation of Vince St. Preux taking on Tanner Boser. But what's your overall feel for this card coming up this weekend?
I'm just going to get this out of the way. Very different levels of heavyweights in the main event and co-main event. Because in the main event, it quite possibly could be a title eliminator. Like, the winner of Volkov and Gane really is on the doorstep of a title shot. In the co-main event, listen, the OSP heavyweight experiment, if you will, it's been weird so far. And I know he's kind of been going up and down in weight. Him against Boser will be interesting. Because Boser, especially in his last fight, gained a little bit more weight. Not the smallest version of a heavyweight. You know, he's pretty big at this point, so we'll be interested to see how OSP deals with another big heavyweight like he fought in Ben Rothwell the first time out. But I'm excited for this weekend's fight with Tim Means, Nicholas Dalby. We were robbed of a Tim Means fight last weekend. Unfortunately for everyone, though, it was, well, not rebooked, but they did put him in there in another great matchup against Nicholas Dalby, which should be an absolutely phenomenal fight.
And overall, a really strange card, because we've had a lot of bookings, rebookings. Yance Medeiros, Demir Hadzevich, they weighed in just a few weeks ago, but ultimately rebooked over onto this card. Julia Avila taking on Yulia Stolyarenko, and that's an interesting fight because Stolyarenko and the Nevada commission, they were going to let her faint on the scale a few times. Like, it was just a really, really weird look, and you hate to see it. And then, of course, just a few weeks later, we even had Ryan Benoit, who had issues on the scale as well. But you talked about it. Tim Means going to be taking on Nicholas Dalby. Means, of course, was supposed to take on one tough out in England's Hot Chocolate Danny Roberts. And ultimately, you had a booking between Nicholas Dalby and Russia's Sergey Kandoshko that we haven't seen in a long time. I was excited for that fight. Really looking forward to it. Kandoshko, obviously, he had major knee surgery and getting ready for that spot. So ultimately, we end up with Dalby Means. But overall, an interesting card. I will say that up at the top, you have really big fighters. Marquez taking on Nzechukwu. And then, of course, OSP, Boser, Volkov, and Gane. Top five heavyweights in that fight. Matt, let's throw on over to our fight of the night screen. We have 13 fights to choose from. We're going to skim it down to two. You let us know down below in the comment section who you're going with. But this screen, as always, presented by Manscaped. Make sure you check them out. Manscaped.com, promo code FNP, you're going to save 20% off and get free shipping. Throw it on over to the fight of the night. And when we're talking about a possible fight of the night, I mean, how could you not go any further than the bantamweight division? I mean, listen, you got a new champion. When will he fight? I don't know, but you got a couple of guys that are unranked but have huge aspirations for the division. In Brazil's Jauni Barcelos, and then Russia's Lucky Timur Valiyev. I love this fight.
These are the fighters we talk about when we talk about fighters who ranked fighters don't really want to fight. You know, they don't have big fan bases, but talent-wise, they can compete with just about anybody, and that's what makes this fight so much fun.
I've got a lot of great facts about this one in the full card video. And then when we flip it on over to our second pick, this one on the main card, tentatively, for now, you've got Andre Fili, who's been in the UFC for about 8 years now. It's crazy to think about that, and he's only 31. He's going to be 31 in a day when he steps into the octagon. So happy 31st birthday to Touchy Fili. He doesn't need to hear that from me, but for Daniel Pineda, maybe I need to pick him up a little bit, because this guy is the definition of killer be killed. He's a one-round hitter-quitter. And he kind of quittered his last time out, taking on Cub Swanson in just a head-scratching performance, I want to say.
We're about to hand it off when we're trying to sell this as fight of the night, but it should be really fun. Like you said, Andre Fili's been there and done that with some of the best fighters in this division's history. He's fought Yair Rodriguez. He's fought Max Holloway. No, yes, he hasn't come out on top in those fights, but he did beat the greatest fighter of all time in Artem Lobov, anybody. So I do think this fight should be really fun. And yes, Pineda didn't really show the best version of himself against Cub Swanson, but Andre Feely's a very different opponent, so hopefully Pineda will be able to highlight much more of his skill set in this matchup.
I mean, for Pineda, all you have to do is look back to his re-entry to the UFC, picking up a huge win over Herbert Burns. Definitely a fun guy to watch. This should be a great fight. This is Pop and Popcorn appointment viewing in that first round. We'll see what happens in the second and the third, but I'm really looking forward to it. As always, the fight of the night screen. It is presented by Manscaped. Check them out at manscaped.com. Use promo code FNP. You're going to get 20% off and free shipping. Tell them that we sent you. I'm really looking forward to these fights. So ultimately, a full slate, a full card. You got 13 so far this week. Just added, Worley Alves and Jeremiah Wells. Unfortunately, Ramzan Ameev out of his fight with Worley Alves. But I don't have to tell you, Alves looked great his last time out against Munir Lazez. For Jeremiah Wells, this is a guy that was just knocking on that door. He was originally supposed to be taking on Miguel Baeza just last year. The fight fell out, but good on him for waiting his turn. He picks up a big fight. We had a lot of action coming up, Matt, this weekend, and I'm really eager to see it through.
Yeah, it should be a really good card. Like we said, two good heavyweight fights in the main event and co-main event. And I really can't stress, like, the winner of this weekend's main event could very well find themselves in a title shot. I know people are still waiting for John Jones, the heavyweight division. Is Derek Lewis next? Is Stipe next? Like, there's a little bit of a logjam right now, but whoever wins this fight really will be at the top of the division.
Make sure you check out all of the videos coming out this week. We've got great interviews as well. One just dropped with one championship flyweight champ, Adriano Moraes. He's a free agent now. That one's buried in there. We got another great one with Christian Lee, another great one championship fighter as well. So keep a lookout for the interviews, the other great content. We had the Panini box break not that long ago. All sorts of moving parts with Fight Night Picks. And make sure you check out the website, fightnightpicks.com. Our own Joshua Hart had one hell of a parlay that hit last weekend. So you can find all of the great info and all the great content. FightNamePicks.com. Matt, big week coming up. You're not going to want to miss it. As I said, just keep it locked in with Fight Name Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it. Really interesting fight coming up this weekend. Now, this is a rebooking originally scheduled for UFC Vegas 27. Both of these guys weighed in. They faced off. And then due to health and safety protocols, the fight was scratched. But we get it for UFC Vegas 30. You got Yancy Medeiros. That's a guy that's fought a lot of really big names in his time, not just with the UFC, but Strikeforce as well. He's taking on the Bosnian bomber, Demir Hadzovic. Matt, I was eager to see this fight through three shows ago and add a pay-per-view in there. Now we get to see it coming up this weekend. But listen, it would be a shame to spoil a perfectly good video. Yeah. So with everything said in mind, we'll flip it back to the old video, we'll update the odds, and we'll offer you our final picks and prediction. Yancy Medeiros, crowd favorite, five-time bonus winner with the UFC. 75 G's, baby! That's what they're saying these days. Now, I don't know if that's going to extend to fight nights. I don't know if it was because everything's bigger in Texas, but Vegas has to get ready for this fight, which was originally scheduled between Hadzovic and Nicholas Mata. And while I would have loved that fight, in steps Yancy Medeiros on short notice. You know exactly what you're going to get out of him. It's either going to be one of the wildest fights you've ever seen, or way too much camaraderie with Donald Cerrone and his grandmother in a really, really odd one. But overall, Yancy Medeiros, very well-rounded, fought a middleweight once with Strikeforce, which is crazy, and I think that thick boy picture is a sure dog picture. But coming into this one, on a little bit of a salty run, if you really look into the five on in, it's not great. He's lost his last three to Cowboy Cerrone, Gregor Gillespie, and Lando Venata. And if you look at it for Demir Hadzovic, same deal. 2-3. You look at the losses. Alain Patrick over 3 years ago. He beats Nick Hine by split. He beats Polo Reyes. Yikes. He loses to Christos Yagos. You lose to Renato Moicano. The only thing that bugs me out of all of those, like, you think of Demir Hadzovic in your mind. You look at the picture that we have over there, and he's kind of like hunched stiff over. But when you watch Demir Hadzovic fight, he's got that really high tie stance. He throws really good kicks. He's good boxing. He's good in and out. He struggles a little bit with the ground game sometimes. And we saw that in the fight against Moicano where it was like, okay, we're going to box. And then Moicano gets him in a body lock, trips him, takes him down. Moicano's in his guard. And he's like, I don't really like this anymore. So Moicano just stands up. Hadzovic lazily stands back up, and what does Moicano do? Inserts himself behind his back, pulls him down, and chokes him out. And then they had a weird exchange after that, because they're not friends. But in a fight like this for Demir Hadzovic, he's out of Arte Suave now. He's working with, I don't know, Kenneth Berg. When's he ever coming to the UFC? 2020 was the year Kenneth Berg rumors, and Panny Kianzad also there. It's an interesting fight for Hadzovic going from Mata to now Yancy Medeiros, who's back in Hawaii, training with Max Holloway, Gracie Technics, in Honolulu.
This is a fight to figure out who's going to Bellator. And I hate that I have to say that, but let's be honest. I do think the loser of this is probably going to get cut. Because for Demir Hadzevich, like, you've had your opportunities. You fought Renato Moicano, who had so much hype down at 145. And let's be honest. Renato Moicano has never really been what we were promised. Like, he's a good fighter. But his best win is definitely the win over Cub Swanson. And a win over Cub Swanson. The win over Calvin Kattar was nice, but it was very early in Kattar's career. Now, I would say, yes, you've got me there. Calvin Kattar is the better win. But when you look back, the biggest win of his career, especially at the time, was the Cub Swanson win. And then you look at Moicano up at lightweight. Okay, listen, getting knocked out by Fazeev, that's going to happen. It's going to happen to a lot of guys, and I'm assuming it's going to happen to a lot of ranked guys sooner rather than later. But still, he just looks so flat in that performance that when you lose to Renato Moicano at lightweight, I have a lot of questions about you fighting other lankier guys at that weight class. And it's not like Yancy Medeiros shares many similarities with Renato Moicano. I mean, build-wise, they're both kind of tall and thin. The thing I'm worried about in this fight, it's kind of the same thing we talked about after the Yancy Medeiros-Lando Venata fight. You can get that great version of Yancy Medeiros where it's, oh, I'm going to flick the jab out there, I'm going to get cracked, I'm going to get into one of these crazy wars. Or you're going to get the version of Yancy Medeiros who's a little bit tentative, because he does realize that, like, those wars start to cause a toll on you. And I just don't think Yancy Medeiros has the same level of durability that he did earlier on in his UFC career. It's nothing against Yancy Medeiros. It's just, you can't have crazy fights with Cowboy, the Brazilian or the American version, and the likes in the lightweight division, and then just expect to continue to be able to have fights like that in his career. And this is a guy you have to remember, he fought at lightweight all the way back when Dustin Poirier was first on his run at lightweight. Now, Medeiros missed weight all the way back then. It's always something that I think about when I think about Yancy Medeiros, because after he fought Eric Silva, he said, hey, I'm probably never going to go back down to lightweight. Like, this is a really big win for me at welterweight, but that's my problem. He had a big win over Eric Silva at welterweight. It's been a while since Eric Silva was a big win at welterweight. I understand that was UFC 212. It was like Hawaii versus Brazil with Max Holloway fighting Jose Aldo at the top of the card. But my problem with Yancy Medeiros is I feel like we let the excitement of his fights get in the way of his skill set. With Yancy Medeiros, I think he's a decent fighter, and I think he would be considered a decent volume striker. But with Medeiros, he's not the most durable guy in the world. So if he is in those extended exchanges on the feet, I'm always worried he's going to get clipped, and especially at 155 with him cutting so much weight. I don't know, I'm just worried about the overall durability of Medeiros staying at 155, and that's not a concern I have about Hadzevich.
All right, so Matt, Demir Hadzevich, Yancy Medeiros, I mean, we loved the matchup before. Now, in full transparency, it is a tricky one. I mean, again, Yancy Medeiros, you wouldn't think is the younger fighter in this one, but he obviously has so much more experience than Demir Hadzevich on the big stage in the UFC. And from Demir Hadzevich, we've seen some really, really good performances in the octagon. Mix those in with just absolute defensive lapses, like his last time out against Renato Moicano. So he went from UFC Vegas 27, where he could walk around freely, strut his stuff. Now he kind of has to do the side eye when he meets Moicano in the elevator. And those guys had really bad blood. But in this fight coming in this weekend, Demir Hadzevich opened a minus 128 favorite. He's now about a minus 148. So the line's moved towards Hadzevich. And if you look at it for that ever experience, Yancy Medeiros, he opened a plus 108. He's at a plus 121. If we have a look at the Tapology votes, they're as much a surprise to us as they are to you. Holy smokes, 898 total votes, 65% Medeiros, 77% by decision for the 35% that have Hadzevich, 69% by decision. Most fans predicting this one to go to decision. Again, Medeiros is training with Holloway and the team over in Hawaii, and you've got Demir Hadzevich out of Arte Suave. What's your final take here?
So, I guess I'm just, if you give me a minute, this could take a second. Yancy Medeiros is a fighter who, like you had said, he did, like he had main events. He's been on the big stage for a while. When you think about Yancy Medeiros, at least I don't think of a guy who's the curtain jerk of a fight night. You know what I mean? Like, Yancy Medeiros at one point in his career was a guy at 170 who you had to watch out for. Now at 155, and this really is the big part of my argument, you saw in his first run in the UFC, the weight cut did get to him, and eventually he was forced to move from 155 up to 170. And he had a decent level of success at 170, and then after he moved back down to 155, we just haven't seen the same fighter. And people always bring up Roy Jones Jr. when he went up to heavyweight, and then when he went back down to light heavyweight, he was just never really the same fighter. And listen, I don't know if that was the same thing with Yancy Medeiros, but he just never really seemed like the same guy after he's come back down to 155. He doesn't really have the volume that he once did. I don't love his power at the weight division either. For me, I just don't look at Yancy Medeiros Medeiros, and there's nothing that pops out that says, wow, he can go out there and finish a fight via X. He can knock you out, don't get me wrong, he can submit you, but he's not so good at either that I can really trust him to go out there and get a finish at any point throughout this fight. And you bring up some of the defensive lapses of Hadzovic, I can't really counter any of those arguments, but I still do like Demir Hadzovic in this fight. I just don't think, even if Demir has somehow a big defensive lapse or some little hiccup in his mind, I still think Yancey isn't the fighter who's going to be able to go out there and get a finish based off that. I don't like the power of Yancey at this division. I don't like his takedown defense either. It's just, for me, I feel like Yancey Medeiros, even though he is the younger fighter, has accomplished a lot more in his career. And when we talk about the experience of Medeiros, we have to bring up the damage at this point and not just the experience. And I do feel like the scale has kind of tipped to where he has taken quite a bit of damage. And at 155, I just don't think this is his place.
And I mean, you look at it for Yancey Medeiros, definitely the tougher schedule in his last number of fights. I mean, in the last five, again, and we talked about it, but Eric Silva 4 years ago was the big win. Alex Oliveira, the big win. He loses to Donald Cerrone, but that was still like a high level Donald Cerrone. That was pre-Conor McGregor Donald
Cerrone.
He
lost three fights in a row, though, before that.
He lost to Gillespie, and he loses to Lando Venata, so we continue to go down the scale. Now, again, you talked about the scale, the fact that he struggled, or 155, a bit of a struggle. He came in right on the dot. He looked good on the scale for the fight that was originally supposed to take place, as did Demir Hadzovic, the smaller fighter in terms of height, in terms of reach. His last two times out, lost to Christos Yagos a couple of years ago, and then a year and 3 months ago against Tanato Moicano, where he just looked lost. And listen, when fighters just look lost, like Nikolai Negomarianu, when he took on Saprobig Safarov, it's a really weird spot going into the next one. So for me personally, I wouldn't have it on my card. I ever so slightly edge Demir Hadzovic, because when this guy gets in the fight in a pocket, he's a very, very good fighter. And if he can draw that fight out of Yancey Medeiros, it should be interesting. But again, as was said, if Yancey takes everything that he learned when he went back over to Hawaii and he comes out with a very grappling-oriented, jiu-jitsu-oriented game plan, could be an easy win for Medeiros, but for me, I'm going with Hadzovic.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Both of us going with Bosnia-Herzegovina's own Demir Hadzovic. Make sure you check out the rest of the videos. Again, this is one of two bookings that's kind of been shuffled around. We have Julia Avila. She's taking on Yulia Stolyarenko, and then you've got some great fights up at the top. Two heavyweight pairings. OSP taking on Bozer, and you also have Cyril Gane taking on Alexander Volkov. You're not going to miss any of those. Keep it locked in with Fight Day Picks, and as we always say, let's get into it. Sneaky fight coming up this weekend. We have Boston Strong, Charles Rosa, representing Boca Raton, Florida, and he's taking on...
I love the Wolf Cola down there.
They love the Wolf Cola down there, but he's taking on Justin James, the Guitar Hero, and Matt... For Justin James, his 2020 was like, I don't know, the Superman roller coaster, because it went up really, really fast with a huge win on short notice against Frank Camacho. And then it went down so, so fast. And now Justin James is in an odd spot, because you look at his overall body of work. He's 16-7. He has plenty of finished wins. He has that great wrestling background in his back pocket. I want to make sure I get it right, because I wrote it down. He went to Olivet College for 4 years, wrestled there. He's a coach at Extreme Couture. And he's the perfect blueprint of a fighter from Extreme Couture. When you think Extreme Couture, you think a guy that can always wrestle, but he works with his hands maybe a little bit more than we like, but when they do, it usually breeds success. I mean, think of a Dan Ige, think of a Boston Solomon, maybe some of those training partners, but for Justin
There's
James...
There's such a big difference between those two fighters.
For Justin James, when you look at it, his previous three fights are all losses. They're all losses by finish. He lost by finish earlier this year to Devontae Smith, where the eye just wasn't doing all that well. And while Devontae Smith didn't get a performance bonus out of that win... Well, the last two fighters did. You go back to the Gabriel Benitez knee. I don't know if I've ever seen somebody's spine pop out.
Oh my God. That's the best way to describe it. Like, it's the most vicious knee to the body you will ever witness.
And his fight before that with Gavin Tucker, it was competitive until it ultimately wasn't. So for Justin James, again, Tucker earned a performance bonus. Benitez earned a performance bonus. For Charles Rosa, Matt, I had it down on my notes. We always used to snicker and go on about Randa Markos. She has that, you know, back and forth record. It's so tricky. Is there any fighter in the UFC that's ever had a record like that? Yes, since Charles Rosa made his UFC debut, 9 fights in a row that have gone back and forth. He's 4-5, alternating wins and losses the whole time. Now, he lost the last fight, so records would tell you that he's going to win this fight, but I don't know if that's true.
It's definitely a winnable fight, and I can't take that away from it. It's just really weird when you break down a Charles Brosa fight, because you talk about the grappling and the karate when you always bring up Charles Brosa, because those are really the two martial arts that he kind of chose to combine for his MMA career. The problem that I have with that is I've seen him get out-grappled now in MMA, and that is a little bit concerning. Like, I understand Bryce Mitchell is that guy as a grappler, don't get me wrong, but when you look at Bryce Mitchell's fight against Andre Feely, who's a fighter that we're going to break down later on in the card, he looked human in that fight. Like, yeah, he took down Feely, but after Feely defended some takedown attempts and forced him to become a striker, like, you could say, okay, Bryce Mitchell's not Khabib Nurmagomedov. Like, there are limits to his grappling. With Charles Brosa, though, it seemed like he was drowning that whole entire fight, and against a guy who, he does have wrestling with Bryce Mitchell, and he does have the jiu-jitsu, it is concerning, because I think Charles Brosa can go out there and out-grapple a lot of guys, and I do like his defensive grappling as well, but he's a guy who, we used to always bring this up with Luis Smolka, I know we're going to have to find a new fighter to talk about it with, but he is a guy who is so comfortable in his own guard, and it does concern me, like, unless you are a Brian Ortega, a Damian Maia, like, one of those one percenters in the jiu-jitsu world, I really don't think the full guard with a closed guard in the MMA world is the best position. You can't sweep from there. It's not like you're getting back up to your feet. It really primarily is a stalling position, and I know Charles Brosa has good submission wins on his back. He has arm bars. He has triangles. It's just, when you do give up rounds off of your back and you're not constantly going for the submission, I do get worried. He's a guy who can be held down and then he'll throw something up. And if he gets it, that's great. But if he doesn't, they'll just kind of get beat up on the ground for a little while longer. Like, he tries to find his opportunities to explode, and it's a smart way to conserve your energy. But my issue with Rose on the mat is, when he does fight guys who are physically stronger than him, at least at 145 pounds, and with Justin James, and I know you're going to talk about it, how we haven't really seen him, you know, the most grappling side of him in the UFC, but with a guy like Justin James, who isn't a small lightweight, who's a well-built featherweight, if you will, him moving down to featherweight, I do have concerns about Charles Brosa on the mat, even though I do think that's probably his best path to victory.
And if you look at it for Justin James, he talked about it with MMA Junkie before his fight against Gavin Tucker, which, again, the story of Justin James 2020 was, I gotta get in there, I gotta take the fight. And it was probably the speed dial call from the UFC, because he's in Vegas, he's in fight-ready shape. So if you look at it, Camacho fight 155, short turnaround against Tucker, 145, he weighs 156, professional, makes the weight. The next two of them are at 55, but again, he just kept fighting and losing and getting finished. And that's the other really weird thing for Justin James. He's lost 7 fights in his career. He's only lost 3 by finish, and it's his last 3. It's definitely a concerning stat. And again, if you want to play the weird game of, well, Rose's alternated wins and losses, this is his chance. But the trouble for me when I look at this one, if you look at it for Charles Rosa, there were big periods of inactivity. His 5th to last fight was against Shane Burgos. He loses by finish just over 4 years ago. And then his next fight's 1 year and 7 months ago against the Bermudez Triangle, where he gets down and then he gets him into the weirdest submission. Like, he kind of pulls him in and Manny Bermudez just decides he forgot how to fight and loses. A guy who couldn't make weight and then couldn't make weight on the regional scene. Was I there for that? You're darn tootin' I was. Then he loses to Mitchell badly. Then he beats Kevin Aguilar by split decision, where, again, Aguilar forgot he was a wrestler and just decided to strike with everybody. And then he ultimately loses last time against Derek Minner. So for Charles Rosa, he's struggled lately against some of the bigger wrestler grappler types. Now, for Rosa, I see on the Instagrams the old ATT pictures. Right now, it's more pictures from American Combat Gym. Again, Boca Raton with Charles McCarthy. You know him as Chainsaw Charles McCarthy, whose last fight was a loss to Michael Bisping in 2008. Crazy stuff. But neat for Charles Rosa. And that's kind of a theme on this card. There's a lot of fighters that have either started their own gyms or kind of branched off, and they're at some smaller gyms. Neat to see from Rosa. But when I look at this one, Rosa coming in about a minus 170 favorite. The line hasn't changed since it opened. For Justin James at about a plus 145. And if we have a look over at the Tapology votes, surprise to us as it is to you, 929 total votes, 85% Rosa, 61% by decision, 30% by submission. For the 15% that have James, 58% by knockout. Matt, I look at this fight, and I do have a hard time, because again, for Charles Rosa, he's an accredited black belt in jiu-jitsu. He has a very competent stand-up game, where he was close in a fight with Kevin Aguilar, ultimately loses a fight with Derek Minner. The trouble at 45 has really been those really wrestle boxer types. And that's who he's fighting. So I know Justin James lost 3 in a row. He's lost 3 in a row by finish, and I could look like a donkey on Saturday night. But for me, I'm going to go with the Guitar Hero. And honestly, I think that's the first time I've ever picked him to win a fight.
I'm going to have to side with Craig on this one. Honestly, stylistically, you have to look at the guys who have beaten James in his last two fights. Because Gavin Tucker, yes, he's good on the mat, but he's much more of a wrestler than Charles Rosa is. So he has the opportunity to take down a guy like Justin James in an MMA fight. Charles Rosa might have an opportunity to drag him down at some point. But to me, it'll be like with a minute left in a round, he's really going to have to scramble to try to get a submission. For Justin James, they get knocked out by a knee to the body from Gabriel Benitez. Could Charles Rosa strike anywhere near the level of power that Gabriel Benitez can?
Be awesome if he could.
It would be. He'd probably be like a champion if he could, but that's the problem. There is a give and take with MMA, and for Charles Rosa, he's got a great gas tank. He's got good volume. He just doesn't have that one-punch power. Same thing with Devontae Smith. Like, he hits really hard, too, and that's what's going to finish you against those guys. So for me, I like Justin James in this fight. I will say this, though. Charles Rosa, you bring up how he's gone wins, losses in pretty much his whole UFC career. This feels like a must-win for both guys. I do have to say that. Like, James coming off three losses, you can't lose to a guy like that and then still expect to be around and fighting those top contender-ish guys. Because it feels like when Charles Rosa gets brought up, people like to bring him up in that, like, 20-15, like, 25-15 range. He's in the UFC for a video game. Like, this is what I mean. Charles Rosa, when he gets brought up.
So is Johnny Eduardo.
I understand. But my whole point was, Charles Rosa was never before, so the developers need people for roasting, throw Eduardo in. You have to remake somebody to put Charles Rosa in the game. Someone went out of their way to do it, is my whole point. It just feels like with Rosa, again, he's got the John Anik connection. I understand it's the Boston thing, but people talk about Charles Rosa like he is a borderline top 15 fighter. He has to prove it at some point, though. Like, you can't lose to Bryce Mitchells and Derek Minners and expect people to keep on talking about your Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. You have to be able to out-grapple grapplers at a certain point. If he goes out there and does it to Justin James, that will completely change my opinion on Charles Rosa as the fighter. But no, I have to agree with you for right now. And stylistically, I just think this is a good fight for James.
Matt, both of us going with the guitar hero, Justin James, to get the win. Love the fights. It's a sneaky little one, kind of hidden in there in the prelims. Lots of great fights. Two big heavyweight contenders up at the top going at it. Cyril Gane taking on Alexander Volkov. You're not going to want to miss it. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it. Neat fight coming up this weekend at Bantamweight. We have Julia Avila, the Raging Panda, who has recently found a new home with a new gym. She's going to be taking on Lithuania's Yulia Stolyarenko, who you most likely remember from, well, about a month ago when she unfortunately fainted on the scale, not once but twice, and really kind of sketchy that the commission even let it happen, well, twice, but they did. And if you go back through it, we'll give credit where credit's due. Yulia Stolyarenko hit up her Instagram right after the fact. She said, listen, guys, it was unfortunate. The weight was falling off. Like, she didn't have a hard time making the weight. The trouble for her was she made the weight too early in the morning, but then you can't rehydrate. You can't do anything. You made weight at 5. You got to weigh in at 9. So you just kind of wait around totally gaunt and such. And really, it just didn't work out for her. But she said it was the best shape she's ever been in her entire life. Now, could she be blowing smoke up our rear ends? Maybe. But Yulia Stolyarenko back out here again to take on Julia Avila. And Matt, ultimately, skill for skill, these are the same two fighters. Let's throw it on back to the original video. We'll update you with the new odds, and we'll have a bit more of a dynamic conversation about what happened after the weigh-ins. Yulia Stolyarenko, and Matt, we don't have a ton of Lithuanian fighters in the UFC, so you get excited about it. And for her UFC debut, it almost seemed like she was this dark horse that never really was in the women's bantamweight division. And I say that because she matched up against Yana Kunitskaya, and the line was fairly close. Like, she was a plus, what, 155, 165? Like, there was a lot of respect on Yulia Stolyarenko's name. And if you have a look at the record, I mean, yes, she was on the Ultimate Fighter Season 28. She lost to Pani Kianzad. She made it to the finale to fight Leah Letson, lost by split decision. Insert the graphic, because listen, if you type in Yulia Stolyarenko right now on Google, the first picture is a picture of Leah Letson, and that's just a problem, because we got to get over that. Since then, she went on a tidy little win streak, won 5 fights in a row. You look at it, armbar, 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 and we're talking sub-minute armbars. And if you want to see a disgusting fight, go watch her fight Invicta FC Phoenix Series 3 for the bantamweight title. She took on Lisa Verzoza. What a disgusting double of cuts. Oh my gosh, poor Lisa Verzoza, but a great fight. Like, if you liked Ross Houston when he took on one tough out Nicholas Dalby, the Verzoza-Stolyarenko fight was for you. The reason why I want to put a lot of weight onto that one is because Yulia Stolyarenko is mostly known for her throws and her jiu-jitsu. You see that from all those armbar finishes. But the real X factor about Stolyarenko is the fact that from 2017 to about 2019, she was in the art of not just eight limbs, we're talking nine limbs. She's fought in Lethwei, and she has huge wins. She's a world champion in Lethwei, and that's just crazy to me. And we've seen it where, as she's progressed in the bare-knuckle headbutting type series, she's gotten better at striking in MMA. It's something you just love to see.
I don't know about that. I think she's definitely gotten better, but I don't know if the fact that she headbutts people in one discipline allows her to really open up her MMA striking now that she's in the UFC. She didn't land a single headbutt against Yana Kuniskaya, and maybe Yana just trained her defense a lot for that technique. But I look at that Yana fight, and it's interesting, because Julia Avila is kind of like a poor woman's version of Yana Kuniskaya. They do a lot of similar things to a degree, but when I look at them, they do match up physically a lot in this weight class. They are two of the bigger fighters, and they will stand a similar range. The thing with Avila, though, she's one of these classic fighters where her top pressure is insane. Her on her back is awful, though, and it's this really weird kind of give and take where if she gets this fight to the ground and she gets on top of Julia for any period of time, I'm very confident Julia Avila's ability to ground and pound her, possibly get a submission, pass her guard, and really get good work done on the ground. But I can look at the flip side of that, and if Julia Stolyarenko can get Julia Avila to the ground, it's going to be much of the same thing, only on the other side. And I hate to call it the Sarah McMahon effect. We've had very different names for it, the Louis Smolka effect, but it is one of those weird cases with Avila. And you go back to the Eubanks fight. That fight was really odd to me, because Avila's one of these fighters who, if you're much more physically strong than she is, she's going to have a tough time with it. And I know I talked about the Jin Yu Fry fight. It didn't really turn out that way, but again, just a fighter who's going to struggle physically with some of the matchups. Avila will be another one of those fighters. And with Stolyarenko, it's odd to say that an MMA fight could come down to strength, but I really do think that this is one of the few fights where that could be a big X factor, because I do think if Avila can get on top of Stolyarenko for any period of time, I'm talking 2 minutes, like at the end of a round, I think she can get great work off, and I don't really think Stolyarenko can get back up to her feet. I think she has a good ground game, but her ground game is much more defensive than it is, oh, I'm going to look to sweep you and get on top of ground and pound you. If she was more sweep heavy, I would favor her in this fight like crazy. And that's the thing, because Avila needs to get this fight to the ground. She's another one of those fighters, I'll bring up Courtney Casey again, who, to really open up her skill set, she has to incorporate the takedown. And that's the thing for Avila. It's always hard predicting her fight, because it does come down to, can she take her opponent down or not? And a lot of the women in the top 10 of bantamweight, or even the top 15, have a judo background, and that's what makes this matchup really interesting.
And if you look at Julia Avila, has a judo background, has a jiu-jitsu background. I mean, they match up very well in this one. For Avila, if you watched any of her tape before the UFC, so if you go back to the Alexa Connors fight, that was a fight of the night, if I'm not mistaken, with Invicta. Then she fought Pani Kanzat, beats her by decision, 2019. That's a huge win. We saw Pani look great against Sajara Eubanks, who Julia Avila struggled against. So you're excited about that one. She had bookings with Carol Hosa all day and Sunday, twice on Sunday, really. That didn't happen. She fought Gina Mazzani, finished her in 22 seconds.
Didn't learn a lot.
Again, if we're making the cheap comp to Invicta, the Phoenix was rising. And then she fought Sajara Eubanks. All three judges scored that 29-27 for Eubanks. And that's the thing. With Julia Avila, her wrestling's decent. Defensive wrestling, maybe not the best. Her aggressiveness on the feet is great. Like, if you go back again and watch a lot of the fights on her way up, very, very good. I mean, she trains out of Oklahoma Martial Arts Academy in Edmond, Oklahoma. I've been there. That's north of the city. Nice little place. But she trains there, and she is a geologist for an oil company. How neat. But in a fight like this, again, Yulia Stolyarenko, you're going to have the threat of the takedown. You're going to have her doing weird, funky stuff with her back up against the cage, and Yana Kuniskaya pushing her forward. Normally has exciting fights. It's just it didn't really materialize her last time out. So, of course, very unfortunate what happened with Stolyarenko. I was really looking forward to that fight when it was originally supposed to take place, because ultimately when it comes down to it, yes, Stolyarenko's fight against Verzoza. Oh, so you're a striker now? We know that she has that Lethwei background in her back pocket, but you can't strike with your head in the UFC unless you get lucky and the referee misses it. Now, for Julia Avila, we know her for her grappling. We know her for her pressure. No longer training out of Oklahoma Martial Arts Academy. She's somewhere smack dab in the middle between Oklahoma City and Edmond. Shouts to the lovely people of Oklahoma. You treated me well the two times I was there. She's now training out of Outsiders Combat Club, Matt. Now, good for her. You like to see it. But I'm really interested to get your take on this matchup, because it is odd, the circumstances going from the original booking to what we're getting now.
Is it though? Like, to me, this is still basically the exact same fight. For Julia Avila, like, I don't really think a minor change to your training camp is that big of a difference. Going from Oklahoma MMA to then going into your own gym, like, you're not making that big of a difference. It's not like she got kicked out of American Top Team is the point that I'm really trying to make. I don't look at her training, changing her training situation and looking at it as, oh, we're going to see a new fighter. And I don't mean that as a positive or a negative. Like, I don't think she's going to all of a sudden go on her own and then level up five times, and then we're going to be talking about Avila taking on Amanda Nunes one day. I still feel very much like we are going to see the same fighter. For me, I keep on going back to the stat I cannot get out of my mind. Because I don't think Yanagudinskaya is a top, top-tier fighter. I think she's a very good fighter, but I do think when she fights the top tier in this division, she really does struggle against them. She beat Yulia Stolyarenko and outstruck her 41-6. Stolyarenko landed 6 significant strikes in a 15-minute fight against Yana Kunitskaya. Yana Kunitskaya has terrible takedown defense and terrible striking defense. So my issue really comes down to, I don't know what Stolyarenko can do to go out there and really beat Avila. I don't think she can go out there and consistently out-grapple her for rounds. I think maybe she can out-strike her on the feet, but this is my problem. I think it's always going to come down to the takedown defense of Stolyarenko. And personally, I just think Avila is the better grappler, especially in the MMA world.
So Matt, if we have a look at the odds for this one, they're kind of silly. I mean, Avila opened up minus 400 favorites. She's minus 354 right now for Stolyarenko. Open to plus 300. She's a plus 271 as it sits over on Tapology. 859 total votes, 90% with Avila, 79% by decision. For the 10% that have Yulia Stolyarenko, 52% by decision, 36% by submission. Seem like you're leaning a certain way, but let's get the pick out of you.
I mean, listen, I don't love the odds on this fight, but at the end of the day, in the bottom where we have who has better predictions at the end of the year, it doesn't come down to what the odds are. I think Avila still should win this fight, even though, like I said, I'm not in love with where these odds are. I don't look at Julia Avila and think, wow, this is a fighter who is all of a sudden going to go into the top 10. I like her skill set, and again, I do like the well-roundedness of her game, and I think it'll be enough to get her past this fight, but I don't really know what Avila's ceiling is after this.
It's really, really tricky if you do look at her recent run in the UFC after Invicta. She beats Pani Kanzad. Wow. And that was only 2 years ago. That's a really, really big win. Then she beats Gina Mazzani. Okay, we're going down a little
bit. Beat the brakes off her, though.
And then she loses to Sajara Eubanks in a fight where it was just like the meme of the Rolling Stones going, da-na-na-na. And it really wasn't a good start me up in that fight. It really wasn't. So, for me, I look at that, I have a little bit of pause. That last fight against Sajara Eubanks, if we go back in the memory bank, was about 9 months ago, so it's been a while. For Stolyarenko in that fight against Yana Kunitskaya, you can either take it with, I don't know, a cheeseburger, or you can take it with a grain of salt. And you look at it for Yulia Stolyarenko, I know there are a couple of commenters out there that posted under the video, yeah, but look at the record. Look at the women that she was fighting,
she
those quick arm bars.
The Ultimate Fighter, too.
You look at those, and not the biggest wins against not the best competition. Then she goes in and fights for Zosa, a very, very good fighter, and picks up a great win where, listen, those cuts were disgusting. And that was an amazing fight. I definitely, like, I really, you should go back and watch that. And then in the fight against Kunitskaya, it was just a weird one where Kunitskaya pressured her up against the cage. She was up off the mat, and then she was trying to get her down but couldn't pull her down. It was an odd situation.
All the things that Julia Avila does well, though.
Everything out of Stolyarenko's game I like, and I like her in this fight. And I think that, again, if you're going to go with Julia Avila at a minus 335 as a parlay piece, I think it's silly. I think there's value in Lithuania's Stolyarenko. Matt's going to tell you otherwise. Matt's got Avila, but hey. It should be a really interesting fight. I can't wait for it. We got some great ones coming up this weekend. OSP's fighting Tanner Boser. That's a weird fight. In the main event, Cyril Gane will be taking on Alexander Volkov. The guy's nickname's Drago, and he's got a back tattoo better than Ben Affleck. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, and as we always say, let's get into it. Straight up on this weekend's card, we have some really weird fights in the higher weight classes. Danilo Marquez is taking on Kennedy Inzechukwu. And then we have Marcin Prachniau taking on Ike Villanueva. Hurricane Ike. Now listen, is the nickname in bad taste? I don't know. But when I look at this fight, well, it's really tricky because for Marcin Prachniau, the guy came into the UFC with a full head of steam. He had a lovely, sexy record. He had a great run in one championship. And listen, sidebar, how often do fighters come over from one championship to the UFC and find a lot of success? It's almost like the UFC matches up one championship fighters the way that one championship matches up ex-UFC fighters. Because they absolutely despise each other. But Marcin Prachniau, when I went back and watched all of the tape to get ready for his last couple of fights, it's pretty good. Like, you like to see what you've seen out of him on the one championship scene. He's got a karate black belt. He has a great head kick. He has a great bit of head movement. Nice little trunk movement. Really sticky.
Head movement's where I'm going to stop, yeah.
Really sticky counter hooks. I love what I saw out of Marcin Prachniok coming into the UFC. And then he took on the buzzsaw that was Sam Alvey. And it was one of the most ridiculous knockouts I've ever seen in all of MMA because it was like, yes, sir, can I have some more? And he's already knocked out, not so much, but on his feet, waltzes forward with his hands down, and gets totally flatlined. For Marcin Prachniok, you look at it. He loses to Sam Alvey, then he fights Magomed Ankalaev. Listen, good fighters lose to Magomed Ankalaev. Marcin Prachniok, somewhere in the mix. Then he loses to Slow Mike Rodriguez, and I go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Marcin, you've been out for a long time. You should have a halfway competitive fight with Mike Rodriguez from what we know about Slow Mike, but he didn't. So then the UFC does the weird thing of matching him up with Khalil Roundtree Jr. Not old Khalil that would take you down, land a little bit of ground and pound. We're talking about Bangkok ready Khalil Roundtree. Marcin Prachniok won the first round, lost the second round, won the third round, and it was one of the weirdest fights in my memory bank.
You can make an argument he won and lost every round in that fight, though, and that's what was so weird about it. Like, he gets hurt every time Roundtree throws a punch, and that's the thing I have to go back for constantly.
He got knocked down twice in the second round. They don't count it as a knockdown,
but it
does. He gets stumbled, this, and then he gets right back
UFC
up.
Stats are wrong, and I just gotta say this right now. They don't count knockdowns the correct way. Like, they don't have Darren Till knocking down Robert Whittaker, but it is very obvious he knocks him down with an elbow. Whittaker falls backwards. That's a knockdown. They don't have it, though. They just don't count the stats. That's right, it's a messed up website. At the end, it just is. For Marcin Prachniok, this is my problem. Those three losses are so bad. And even the one win at the end, like, the Roundtree win, you could even throw question marks behind. Because personally, I thought Roundtree won that fight. Like, I thought the damage that Roundtree did secure in that fight was enough for him to win it. Now, you could say, oh, the forward pressure of Prachniok was enough to give it to him. And I guess you're kind of right. Because again, that fight was really, really weird if you want to go back and see a strange one. But for me, that fight isn't a fight that says you've ended a three-fight losing streak, if that makes any sense. You know, like, that fight is basically a no contest. Because for me, I didn't learn anything new about Marcin Prachniok in that fight that I didn't know going into it. Like, I still don't love his head movement. He still has, he has good forward pressure, but this is my problem. He has terrible range perception. He's not good at knowing when he's inside of his great punching range and outside of his punching range. Because there's a lot of the times where, and I chirp Jody Esquivel for this, but Jody Esquivel's a fighter who, she'll throw these crazy hooks and be 6 feet away from the person she's trying to hit her with. Prachniok sometimes almost starts his combination a little bit too early. It's something I always talk about, and I bring up Dan Hardy for this, where Dan Hardy always says, oh, when you throw your combination, you always want to emphasize a different strike and put the power behind that. With Prachniok, I'm a big fan of a fighter who starts his combination understanding that, okay, I might miss my first two, knowing I'll land the third, fourth, and fifth. But for Prachniok, sometimes he'll straight up just throw a combination in the air and then end it with a kick. And that's fine. It's good at keeping his opponent at range, and I do like the kicks. But for me, he doesn't use the kicks as a way to land and constantly keep his opponent at range. Like, if you're missing with your kicks, that's fine. But for the most time, it's his opponent takes a step back, he throws a head kick that's never going to hit anything, does the spin, and then both fighters reset. Against a guy like Ike Villanueva, who, listen, nothing Ike Villanueva does is going to jump out at you. Nothing he does is going to really wow you on the stat page. But he's a really great, well-rounded fighter who's got great forward pressure, and I'll say a basic stand-up game, but an effective stand-up game at that. And honestly, I think the forward pressure of Ike Villanueva and the forward pressure of Marcin Prachniok will make this an entertaining fight at the very least. I know I haven't said the greatest things about Prachniok leading up to this, but I do think this will be a very entertaining fight.
If you look at Marcin Prachniok, I mean, this is a guy that you can kind of call, like, Marcin Storms a Bruin Prachniok, because if he's coming at you that way, you can see some of the strikes coming. But again, I can't emphasize this enough. Go back and watch him fight before he came to the UFC, and he looked like an absolute world beater. And again, if you go back and you look at the overall body of work, his last time out, Conor McGregor fought on a Marcin Prachniok card. Marcin Prachniok got a win on a Conor McGregor card, and Conor didn't.
Do you think Conor McGregor will tell his kids that?
He might. I mean, it's just like the Ode Osborne lore. But when I look at this one, for Ike Villanueva, a lot of really important wins on the regional scene. He was a Fury guy. He came in from Fury at about the same time that Anthony Ivey did, so I kind of confounded them or conflated them about the same. Hey, they're good. And I mean, if you look at it for Ike Villanueva, the two wins coming into the UFC, Roger Narvaez, who was in the system, as well as Rashad Coulter. And it wasn't just like, oh, well, he beat Roger Narvaez like a while ago. That was a year and 9 months ago. He finished him. Then he finished the Daywalker. That was a year and 8 months ago. I mean, really, if you look at it, Rashad Coulter was supposed to fight Haseem Rahman, like, junior, mind you. But still, Rashad Coulter.
Wild.
Ike Villanueva in the UFC, though, he moves up to heavyweight where maybe you'd seen him there before. But he took on Chase Sherman, lost by finish. Lost by finish to Jordan Wright, who, again, didn't look very good his last time out. And then knocked out Vinicius Mojea in a fight where I got a lot of DMs right before that one because the line went whoop. Like, right in the last, like, 12 hours or so, and a lot of people were like, should I still have Villanueva? Like, I had Villanueva, but it's really weird because Vinicius Mojea
just got knocked out in the UFC, and that was it.
Yeah.
I hate to say it that bluntly, but look at Vinicius Mojea's UFC tenure. He only got knocked out in the UFC, and by, like, Paul Craig at that. This is my problem. Like, Ike Villanueva is a fighter who came to the UFC a little bit too late in his development and almost career. And it sucks because he's a guy who got into the sport a little bit late in life. And I'm going to bring this up. We talked about Hany Barcelos a little bit later where it sucks because you look at his skill level and you look at where he is in the division. He's almost a little bit behind where you'd like him to be. Like, if he was 3 years younger, everything would be great. And for Ike Villanueva, listen, at 37, you could still be a competitive light heavyweight and a heavyweight. It's not ideal, though.
Jan Blachowicz became a champ up there. Okay. So you never know.
Jan Blachowicz has a very technical skill set, though, on the feet and on the mat. When I look at Ike Villanueva, he does lack some of those finer details in his skill.
Ike Villanueva coming out of 4-ounce Fight Club, and he also has Bob Perez kind of in his corner, the Derek Lewis whisperer, if you will, so that makes things really interesting. You also have a fellow Texas area fighter from the same area and gym in Daniel Pineda, who's also on this card.
This is my question for you. Why is Marcin Prakhniov such a big fight, such a big favorite in this fight? Like, he's been knocked out in 3 straight fights and then barely beats Khalil Roundtree Jr., who, listen, on his best day is a tough fighter who's got good knockout power, but it's not, like, beating Khalil Roundtree Jr. by decision is how you're going to beat him. So, for me, I guess I'm just asking you, like, why do you see the odds where they are right now? Because they are kind of ridiculous.
There are certain fights on this card. Again, Julia Avila beating a minus 400 at open against Stolyarenko, and then you've got Marcin Prakhniov, who's at a minus 220. I think it's upside, it's ceiling, and then, like I already mentioned, it's a blast from the past. If you go back and watch, like, the Galvao fight over with one championship, the guy could take a shot, and you saw that in the Roundtree fight, oddly enough.
Yeah, he got wobbled a lot.
The head movement wasn't the greatest, he got wobbled a lot, but ultimately he ended up winning the fight. And, yeah, when you look at this one, I mean, again, Prakhniov opened a minus 193. He's a minus 212 right now at best fight odds. For Villanueva, open to plus 168 is plus 171. If we have a look at the total Tapology votes, 899 of them, 73% Prakhniov, 57% by decision, 36% by knockout. For the 27% that have Villanueva, 86% by knockout. I do like this fight, but again, I and full bias out there if it hasn't been already, I do like parts of Prakhniov's game. Out of Ike Villanueva, it really hurt to watch him fight Chase Sherman and just absorb the damage that he did. Same thing against Jordan Wright. You hate to see it. And then he had a great timeout against Vinicius Mojea, but it didn't really tell me a lot going into this fight. Where's Marcin Prakhniov? Is he better than Rashad Coulter? Is he better than Narvaez? Maybe.
It's like slow Mike?
That's the thing. So I look at this one. I have a really hard time with it. Ultimately, I side with Poland's Prakhniov. And again, we'll just have to see what happens.
I guess I'll side with Prakhniov too. Like, this is a really weird fight. And again, I know both guys are coming off wins, and there's a lot of other fights on this card where both guys are coming off losses. This is a must-win for both guys, because in the way that it's not like knocking out Vinicius Mojea isn't like you finished your winning streak. Like, okay, you beat him, but you're kind of supposed to. Everybody else in the UFC has too. And Marcin Prakhniov, he's a slight step up from there. Like, at least he has a decent win on his record against Khalil. I will pick Prakhniov, because again, I do like the kicks, and I do think he's slightly more dynamic on the feet. But for Prakhniov, I don't see the highest ceiling in the world, if I'm being completely honest. The loss to Slow Mike really get hurt him in my eyes, because that was the thing. Losing to Ankalaev, it's no big deal. Like, great fighters are going to get knocked out by Ankalaev, and great fighters have been knocked out by Ankalaev. But getting knocked out by Mike Rodriguez does kind of tarnish your legacy in my mind, and the fact that he is only 32 years of age, it's not a guy who, okay, he has accomplished so much in his career. He's a guy who still has quite a bit left ahead of him. So I ever so slightly will side with Prakhniov, but I am concerned against him against those top 15 guys at 205.
Both of us going with Poland's Marcin Prakhniov to get the win. Really looking forward to this card. As we mentioned, Danilo Marquez, he's got a tough fight coming up against Fortis MMA Zone, Kennedy and Zechku. And then if you look at it, big fight in the main event. Ciryl Gane is taking on Alexander Volkov. You're not going to want to miss any of those videos. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it. Big time fight coming up this weekend. We have a short notice replacement in the former CFFC welterweight champ, Jeremiah Wells. He's going to be taking on Brazil's Warley Alves. And Matt, if fans aren't familiar with Jeremiah Wells, this is a guy that it's a lot of fun to go back and watch some of his regional fights. You might know him at a Henzo Gracie Philly. He's a teammate of one Sean Brady. And there's a lot of great fighters out of Henzo Gracie Philly over the years. But Jeremiah Wells is one of those guys that a lot of people have been saying on the Underground Whisper Networks, the Sean Bitters, the Nolan Kings, the whoever else is. There's a lot of big names. I just can't credit everybody. So two is all you'll get. But there's a lot of people that have been high on Jeremiah Wells for a very long time, that his opportunity, maybe this is a little late because he's about 34 and a half, but finally gets the opportunity to fight in the UFC. He was, like I said, champ with CFFC, and right after that vacated his belt, signed with the UFC, was supposed to fight Miguel Baeza last year, but Baeza wasn't cleared to fight, so he's had all of this time off. His last time out there, you go back and watch it, it's against Marco Smallman. Way back, a year and 8 months ago was his last fight. Before that, 2 years ago against Mumia Abu-Dey-Ali, where he knocks him out, 3-1 the record, and for Smallman, 6-2. Before that, a loss to Vinicius De Jesus 2 years and 2 months ago, CS. But Vinicius De Jesus is one of those guys in the regional scene that you see on a lot of fighters' records. He's now taking on Warley Alves, who's getting ready for Ramazan Ameev, a guy that I'm a wrestler, but all of a sudden I'm a kickboxer, and I pull my shorts down to an uncomfortable level. But for Warley Alves, we've seen the game. I lose to really good fighters. I beat fighters that aren't in the upper tier, like top 15 level.
Colby Covington?
Or some fighters that are on their way up, like Colby Covington. And then some nights, Warley Alves shows up, and it's like if Matt fought in the cage against Jeremiah Wells.
Yeah, pretty much. There is just a night and day version between those two versions of Warley Alves. For Alves, I'm going to bring up Ben Simmons. Like, it really does seem to be kind of a mental thing with him. Like, if he is 100% ready for the fight, he's a tough guy to go in there against. Like, people bring up the fact, like, for instance, Jeremiah Wells, he's a very well-rounded mixed martial artist. I guess we'll have to speak about Jeremiah Wells to then really give Warley Alves the credit he deserves. Jeremiah Wells, brown belt Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, like you said, trains with Sean Brady. He has training partners that can get him ready for this style of opponent. Now, it is on short notice, which isn't great, and we'll get more into that in a second, but still, there's a lot to like coming into this fight for Jeremiah Wells. I feel like the headline for this fight should still be debuting UFC fighter is somehow younger than Warley Alves, because Warley, how is he 30 years old? Like, that's the thing that keeps on surprising me. Every time I look at his Tapology page, I'm like, wait, he's 30.
He won the Ultimate Fighter Brazil Season 3 back in 2014 at middleweight. He beat Marcio Alessandre Jr. And then he beat Alan Jobin, Nordin Taleb, and Colby Covington.
Which is an extremely impressive win streak to go on. And the thing about Warley Alves has always been, can his stand-up ever catch up to where his ground game is? Because at the start of his MMA career, it was just a jiu-jitsu. He didn't really have, he had the power, I guess. He just didn't really have the technique to go along with the punching power that he had. And then he was starting to put everything together. And then, of course, he loses that fight to Brian, and he's lost a few since then. And we kind of know the story. But for Warley Alves' story, anybody who he grapples with, he is going to have a massive advantage with. Unless you do bring up, like, the fight against Randy Brown, which I don't know if I have an explanation for that performance. It was just odd. Like, Warley Alves looked like he didn't want to be there. And I don't want to speculate any further than that. He just looked like he didn't want to be in there that night. And I would say nobody can submit Warley Alves. Like, I would put one of those Matt guarantees next to it. But we have seen it be done. I won't say this much, though. I don't think Jeremiah Wells can submit Warley Alves. Can he go out there and out-wrestle him? Yes, he could be able to out-wrestle him for slight periods of this fight. Could he out-grapple him in moments and stay on top? I think he could, but the problem is we talk about that version of Warley Alves that we have seen before. The last version of Warley Alves that I saw in my mind's eye was great, and that's the version that I have to assume we're going to be seeing from this point moving forward, or at least that's the version that I have to go from this point out, because I have no idea what's going on between the ears of Warley Alves. I only know what's going on inside the cage. Based on his last performance, he looked to be that guy again who was in that 25-15 range, who, listen, could he beat the top tier wrestlers in the division? Maybe not, but anybody else, if he could take them down, he had a really good chance to beat them. So for Warley Alves, I feel like this is a very winnable fight for him. This is a very good fight for him to have at this stage of his career, I should say, because Jeremiah Wells, like you had said, very well rounded, very well respected guy, I should say, on the regional scene. So it's not like you're just beating some random guy on short notice coming in to fight Warley Alves. So I do feel like this will still be a quality win for Alves if he can pull it off. And it's against a guy who is so well rounded, which makes this fight so much fun.
Jeremiah Wells is one of those guys that has good wrestling. He's got decent jiu-jitsu, and he has really, really crafty and tricky striking. Like, he could throw a knee up the middle. He could cut you with an elbow. He could go in there, throw a nice crisp boxing combination, or absolutely rush the cage, get you into the clinch, take you down, and then work his own game. So for Jeremiah Wells, you like what you see in the regional scene. For Warley Alves, again, if you go for the five on in, he beats Sultan Aliyev back about 3 years ago. Doctor stoppage. He loses James Kurz by finish. Yikes. He beat Sergio Moraes 2 years ago. Still meant something, kind of. Loses to Randy Brown by triangle. Now, we've said this for a while with Fight Night Picks. Rude Boy Randy Brown was kind enough to do an interview with JHK before his last fight where he beat Alex Oliveira. Randy Brown's a sneaky fighter in this division. If he can bring everything together, he's a very special product. You saw that with the one-arm rear naked choke that he had on Oliveira's last time out. Sometimes he loses fights he shouldn't, but Randy Brown, by and large, is a good fighter. But the fight against Warley Alves was really weird. And listen, it's enough to trust us. Go watch it.
That's what I mean. Like, Randy Brown could beat Warley Alves anyways. This is what I mean. I'm not trying to say all this to discredit what Randy Brown did that night, because it was a very impressive performance. But I'm telling you, if he fought any other version of Warley Alves, the fight would not look that way, at least. He might knock him out. He might out-wrestle him. He might beat him in other ways. But again, I just can't stress how weird that performance is. If we've been talking about how weird his performance was against James Krause and Randy Brown, then just take our word for it.
And if you look at it for Warley Alves, I mean, let's look at the last three wins. Again, Sultan Aliyev finishes him, performs the night win over Moraes, performs the night win over Munir Lazzez, where he's a plus 200 underdog in a weird co-main event, and he picks up a huge win like that. Now, if you go back and look at that, that was on the Magny Chiesa card, which was sneaky, sneaky good if you really go back. But again, it was a Wednesday, so a lot of people missed it. But overall, really big win for Warley Alves. If you look at the odds for this one, just kind of different, I guess. I mean, you've got Alves open at minus 205. He's now minus 233. For Jeremiah Wells, open at plus 165. He's a plus 186. And if we have a look over on Tapology for those votes, holy smokes. 468 of them, 91%. Alves, 56% by knockout, 13% by submission. 9% have Wells. Everything's kind of split up, but what are you thinking?
Wells is good at a lot, but great at nothing. And that's my big issue. It's the truth, though. Like, he's a well-rounded fighter. You can't specialize in everything. No one can. No one ever has. So it's not me knocking him. It's just, when you're a well-rounded fighter, you lack the specializations that a guy like Warley Alves has. Alves on the mat, like I said, against pretty much anybody, he will have a grappling advantage against him. Wells is a good grappler, like we said, but there's levels. Like, Warley Alves goes out there and out-grapples the majority of guys he's in there with. And if you do shoot for takedowns, you always have to know where your neck is. Because, again, I read about the Colby Covington loss, and you did too. Like, Colby Covington... Yeah, sorry. Well, lost for Covington, but for Alves. Yeah, when he went for the takedown, though, Alves is just really smart and he's really good with the guillotine. We talked about that with Tim Elliott, how, like, Tim Elliott just has some positions he's great in, and Nick Lentz to a certain extent, also, where Nick Lentz has that guillotine position where, listen, you might be able to out-grapple him in a lot of other places, but the guillotine is deadly. And for Warley Alves, very similar in that way. So, for Wells, he's got to be really careful on the feet against a guy who's got a ton of power, and then he can't really take his opponent down. I just don't see how Jeremiah Wells can be able to get this done. I think Warley Alves, at the peak of his powers, is a tough fighter for really anybody in the top 20, I'd say. And here's the last thing. This is a short notice fight for Jeremiah Wells. He has had a massive time off in between his last two fights, and the fact that he is coming into this fight on short notice does concern me. There's guys who, like I said, in the top 25 would have trouble with Warley Alves with a full training camp. You're asking a guy making his UFC debut on not a huge card, but I'm sure they're still going to the Octagon jitters to beat a guy like Warley Alves. I just think it's too much too soon.
Really, really tricky fight. Warley Alves also has a teammate on this card in Howny Barcelos, who, again, both guys coached by Pedro Hizo, so I can't wait for it. But both of us going with Brazil's Warley Alves to get the win. Can't wait for it. And I do think Jeremiah Wells has a really good career ahead of him in the UFC. Just a shame we get him a little bit later on in life. Similar to Carlson Harris, who came in recently with a big win over Christian Aguilera. Maybe Jeremiah Wells has a little bit of that in him. I can't wait for this fight. Big time card. Gone taking on Volkov in the main event. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Matt, there's been a drought in the UFC, and farmers, you want to tend to your crops because we have the return of the tractor. Michel Prezeris, he's going to be taking on one really tough out in Kazakhstan, Shavkat Rakhmonov, and Matt. for Shavkat Rachmanov. You can't have a better debut than he did against Cowboy Alex Oliveira. And if you don't know Kazakhstan's Rachmanov, this guy is one special fighter. 13-0, former M1 Global welterweight champion. You want to go back and have a lot of fun. We go back and watch his fight against Odilov. You go back and watch his fight against Danil Prikaza. You go back and watch some of these fights that you can find for free on YouTube, but also maybe you got to pay a little bit of money on Fight TV. He's such a dynamic striker. He has a great submission game. His wrestling defense is eh. I mean, he'll give up a takedown to get a submission. He will then take you down. He'll have some judo throws, some spinning kicks to the body. He is an all-action type of fighter, and that's what made his fight against Alex Oliveira so much fun. He was originally supposed to be the first fighter of Kazakhstan to fight in the UFC, but fights fell out. He's supposed to take on Bartosz Fabinski. He's supposed to take on Ramzan Amiev. He's supposed to take on Elize Uzelesky de Santos, and then he ended up with Alex Oliveira. Matt, the promotion put a lot of stock in Shavkat Rachmanov coming into the UFC, giving him names like that. And for him to be taking on Michel Prezeris, it's a little weird because for Prezeris, he's been in the UFC since 2013. Now, the biggest glaring hole of Michel Prezeris is not the fact that he is probably the smallest welterweight you've ever seen. I mean, we're bridging on Deron Wynn type territory because the guy's 5'6 at 170. And is it of his fault? Yeah, it's 100% his fault. Now, I wrote this down. He's had 4 fights at 170 in his career. He's had 9 fights in the UFC at 155. 9 UFC fights at 55, 4 at 170. But why?
I know.
This is why. He missed weight at 155 pounds. He fought Gilbert Burns. He weighed 158. He won the fight. Great. That's awesome. Cool. He was a plus 200 underdog. So that's a big win. Then he fought Mads Brunel. He weighed 159 pounds for that fight. He was a minus 370 favorite. Then he ended up fighting Desmond Green. He weighed 161. So they made a move up to 170. Beats Zach Cummins by split. He beats Bartosz Fabinski by guillotine. That fight was insane. And then he lost to the Austrian Wonder Boy, EFC's own, Ismail Nardiev, his last time out. 2019, that was in February. But here's the problem. Michel Prezeris is going to give up a huge advantage in height and reach in this fight. 9 inches of height, 10 inches of reach, and oh, by the way, why has he been away since 2019? Why is he coming into this fight at, what, almost 40 years old? Oh, well, it's fun. I have it here. Matt, in a 2020 USADA article, he tested positive for exogenous boldenone and its metabolite dating back to a 2019 urine sample, March 2019. That's the exact same thing that Bruno Silva took who fought last weekend. So, hey, maybe it's a premonition. Maybe because Bruno Silva came back off the sauce and knocked out poor old Wellington Turman, Michel Prezeris is going to come out and knock out Shavkat Rachmanov. I don't know, but Michel Prezeris is one hell of a wrestler and one hell of a grappler, and that's what makes this fight so interesting.
Is he one hell of a grappler at 40, though? That's what I keep on going back to, because for me, Michel Prezeris is a weird fighter, because throughout his career, you bring up some of the guys he beat. Like, go back and look at that Gilbert Burns fight. He beat him by out-grappling him, oddly enough, by being the heavier guy on top and holding down his opponent. And that's what Prezeris is really good at doing, oddly enough. Like, he doesn't really wow you with any of his skill sets, and I always think back to this Trae Young article, and I hate Trae Young. But Trae Young said, listen, my athleticism is not going to wow you, but when it comes to fundamentals, I know what I'm doing. And I've got to give him credit. Like, he's 6 feet tall, but he's as good as guys who are 7 feet tall, because fundamentally he is so sound. And for Prezeris, he's a very fundamentally sound grappler. And I know people talk about the wrestling and the jiu-jitsu, but he is a very Jake Shields-esque kind of a grappler. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way, because he will secure a lot more submission wins that way, but he is much more control-based over submission-oriented. And even if you look at a lot of the submission wins, they're more because he gets his opponent down. He's able to tire them out, get them into a bad position, and then submit them. He's not like a Charles Oliveira who's going to go from the clinch, jump onto your back in one movement, and then try to beat by a rear naked choke. He has a much more methodical way of going from point A to point B.
You never see back-to-back north-south choke wins. He has them against an old Josh Berkman and then Mads Brunel, who, listen, Mads was a little early first time in the UFC. He's good with Bellator now, but that's incredible.
And exactly. Those are very impressive wins. And as someone who has over a day played in UFC 4, I've never gotten a single north-south choke in my whole life. So the fact that this man was able to do it twice in an actual competition is very impressive. For me, though, this is one of those weird fights that does come down to height and reach, and those are two things that you do have to talk about, because Prezeris, to win this fight, has to get his hands around Rachmanov. I don't think anybody out there thinks that Michel Zaris can beat Rachmaninoff in a kickboxing fight. You'd be crazy if you could think that. He's giving up so much reach and so much height. And that's why I think his wrestling is going to struggle. Because Rachmaninoff can, A, stand at such a distance to where he'll be able to fire off kicks and punches from so far away that I don't think Prezeris is going to be able to take advantage of Rachmaninoff opening up and then, oh, wow, I can shoot him for my takedown there. Prezeris, at the age of 40, doesn't have that same explosiveness in his takedown attempts. And I don't think he's going to have the cardio to be able to match a guy like Rachmaninoff at the age of 28. And with Rachmaninoff, like, the hype is there for a reason. He is 13-0, all wins coming by stoppage. What is it? 7 by knockout, 6 submission, or the other way around, one or the other. Like, he's so well-rounded in those two aspects of the jiu-jitsu and the kickboxing to where, me, I really think that this fight's going to be a showcase fight for Rachmaninoff. For Prezeris, and listen, that's not really much of a hot take, I don't think. He's fighting a 40-year-old who probably doesn't belong in the weight class. But for Rachmaninoff, I understand that a lot of people are hesitant because his takedown defense is a little bit porous, and that's what Prezeris is so good at. But at this stage of their careers, I just think Prezeris can be that same fighter who can march his guys forward like a smaller Yoel Romero, and then go for the takedown. I think he is going to eat quite a bit of damage at range throughout this fight, and I do think that damage is going to accumulate as the fight
for
goes
Shavkat Rachmaninoff, this guy coming out of Kazakhstan top team, but we've also seen him at a Stanford MMA here recently training, and I threw down a few of the names that he was with, but obviously you have Henry Hooft in the picture. A couple of other big names, Nick Lentz. I feel like that's a body that really can kind of replicate Michelle Prezeris, a little short, a little thick, especially for a retired Nick Lentz. Also had Fazeev there, which I was kind of surprised to see. I had to go to Fazeev's Instagram, do a little bit of a deep dive, but he is training at Stanford MMA. He also has with him Sergey Morozov and Zhalgash Umagulov in some of the pictures in Florida. The boys from Kazakhstan representing in just a hot and sticky state. Matt, getting ready for this fight, you've got Shavkat Rachmaninoff, the biggest mover and shaker on this card so far. He opened a minus 150, he's minus 275 right now. For Prezeris, he opened a plus 130, he's now a plus 218. And if we have a look over on Tapology, 957 total votes, 90% Rachmaninoff, 47% by decision, 40% by knockout. For the 10% that have Prezeris, 68% by decision. Matt, here's the part where I'm going to be brutally honest. I've had people hit me up on Instagram all day today saying, my big parlay piece, my MVP is Shavkat Rachmaninoff. And props to you. I'm too afraid to put this one on my card, and here's why. Michelle Prezeris, not that long ago, although again, he's a month shy of being 40. He's coming off a suspension. He looks like a brick shithouse on his Instagram because all he's done is lift weights and done kickboxing in the last 2 years. But for Michelle Prezeris, I've seen his fights. He can grapple grapplers. He can grapple very good grapplers, the likes of a Bartosz Fabinski, and finish him in the first round. Now, could Andre Muniz do it?
He can't close range, though.
Sure. That's going to be the trouble for him. Can Prezeris close the range and take Rachmaninoff down? I think there's more than a snowball's chance in hell. That's why this fight scares the hell out of me. I wouldn't have it on my card for those reasons. Having said that, I will take Rachmaninoff, but I could smell an upset in this fight.
Dana White, I don't know if you watch these videos, but if you do, if Rachmaninoff wins this, give us the Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos one. That's the fight that I want to see. That's the fight that the fans want. No, I do agree. I think for Rachmaninoff, this is a big opportunity, but it could go sour for him very fast. Because if you lose to a guy like Prezeris, who has, listen, like, I think Prezeris is a very, really good fighter. I respect what he's done. He has good wins. But if you lose to a 40-year-old in the wrong weight class, it's really going to hurt your start potential. So for Rachmaninoff, this is a very pivotal fight in his career.
Michelle Prezeris averages 4.11 takedowns per 15 minutes. That's absolutely insane. I can't wait for this fight. Both of us going reluctantly with Kazakhstan's Shavkat Rachmaninoff. Let us know down below in the comments section who you're going with in this fight. Because the upset wins, they're a-blowing. This is Pop and Popcorn if we ever did see one. Big-time fights at the top of this card. We have Danilo Marquez taking on Kennedy and Zetchiku. We also have Cyril Gane taking on Alexander Volkov. You're not going to want to miss it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it. Big-time fight coming up this weekend at light heavyweight. We have Danilo Marquez taking on Kennedy and Zetchiku. And Matt, I say big-time because these are two of the bigger fighters that you're ever going to find at light heavyweight. For Danilo Marquez, 6'6", for Kennedy Nzechuku, coming in at 6'5". And for Nzechuku, he's one of those guys that if you go back and you watch the overall body of work, and this is my criticism before the Carlos Ulbrich fight, he's never used his distance and his length to his advantage. You look at the fight over Dennis Bryant, where, again, the commentary team, can he throw kicks? Yes, he can throw kicks. But you go and watch that, didn't have the killer instinct, he had him hurt. And then he just kind of waited for the referee to end the fight. You got to go in there and finish it. Then he makes his UFC debut. He fights Paul Craig. He gets finished. Again,
Paul Craig submits everybody.
A couple of guys that don't have a good read on Paul Craig and how good he could be, but Paul Craig, that one's tricky. He fights Darko Stuzic, and Matt, points were taken away in that fight. Darko decided he liked to make some kicks to the cup. And then, for Kennedy, he fights Carlos Ulbrich, and it's like, all right, everything, you know, all the game planning, it's all in the right place. Saif Saud has a great spot for him. He's got things figured out. We're going to go into this fight. We're going to pick up a really big win over the City kickboxing guy. It was UFC 259. You had Ulbrich. You had Shane Young. You had Israel Adesanya. Listen, the place was buzzing about the City kickboxers. And listen, not that long ago, we had a similar card. Adesanya was on the card. Brad Riddell was there. But again, you look at that card, and it was really, really tricky. Now, did I make a mistake? Did I say that, hey, we had Shane Young on that card? Yeah, I did. Was he on there? No, he wasn't. But when you look at that one, it was tricky, right? Because in the first round, Carlos Ulbrich looked pretty good.
He couldn't miss.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, his cardio fell off a cliff. His hands started to fall. And credit where it's due, Kennedy was still in the fight. He took the hardest shots. And then he started to land some of his own. And he finished the fight. And that finishing sequence was amazing. And Kennedy and Zetchiku flew. He soared like a phoenix. I could not be happier for the guy. That was a huge win. His second in the row in the UFC. And he seemed really displeased with the way that he got the win over Darko Stuzic. So again, the sportsmanship was there. But the win over Carlos Ulbrich, it's like, all right, Kennedy and Zetchiku, the stumble out of the gates against Paul Craig, now it can be forgotten. He's taking on Danilo Marquez, who's a guy that, Matt, I think we had the worst read on this guy coming into the UFC. The level of competition coming in was absolutely abhorrent. Awful. I mean, he fought Clayton Catano back in 2018, who was 5-4. He beat Marcin Pulmano, who was 0-16 before that. He lost to Myron Dennis, that was 13-6. He beat Junior Lorenzo, who was 5-9. He lost to Marcio Tellez, apologies, who was 6-6. And he had the longest time off between fights. And again, he came into the UFC and I thought, this guy, I get it. He's great at King's MMA. He's a great guy to replicate other fighters in the gym. He probably works out quite a bit with Fabricio Werdum. We're going to get a neat look. And then he fought Hadis Ibrahimov and he looked good. And then he fought Mike Rodriguez and he looked really good. So for Danilo Marquez, I'm kind of on the train. He was originally supposed to take on Ed Herman in this fight, which would have been kind of a neat matchup. I would have been there for
that. Fight
night
pick's favorite.
That would have been a great one. Love the Ed Herman fights. But now it's interesting because Inzechku's fought the grappler before and he lost that fight. Danilo Marquez is a guy that even watching regional fights in Brazil, I saw him corner in a fight that had Luana Pinheiro. Like, this guy's really interesting. He's a jack of all trades.
So the question really comes down to, could a 41-year-old Shogun Hua beat Danilo Marquez?
I don't know.
Probably not, maybe. I'm just trying to gauge where the Paul Craig grappling is in all of this. Because for Danilo Marquez, it's weird. He's 35. He's huge for the weight class. You would think he's done progressing in his career, but I do feel like we have seen an improved fighter, at least his last two fights out. The fighter who was in there against Mike Rodriguez not only emphasized the submission, but just won pretty much every minute of that fight. And listen, I know Slow Mike's not the most eye-popping talent out there, but he's a decent fighter. Like, yeah, right? He's a decent fighter. And I do think that that was a really quality win for Danilo Marquez. My question mark really comes into, how good can Kennedy and Shechku get in that one training camp since his last fight? Because in his last fight, he just showed that he was tough and had good cardio. And listen, I think that could take you very, very far, especially at the light heavyweight and heavyweight divisions where the skills aren't normally as good as they are down at like light heavyweight and, or sorry, down at welterweight and lightweight. But for me, I think Kennedy's also in that band. He's only 29 years old. And at light heavyweight, that is so young, you have no idea. That's why I always get excited when you have guys who are like 27, 28, 29 in that heavyweight, light heavyweight range. You know, they're going to be fighting the top fighters in that division for years and years and years to come, and you're going to be able to see their skills develop. My whole point, I guess, I'm trying to get to is that Kennedy and Shechku, every time out there, has gotten better. And I do think that we are seeing an improved version of them every time out. And one thing I do really like, you bring up the size that both these guys have. I like the cardio of Kennedy as well. He's a really big guy who does move very well for the weight class. I do kind of liken him a little bit to Ben Rothwell. Not, again, this submission game, not so much, but I will say, they are two big guys who move exceptionally well for just what their physiques look like. I'm extremely excited for this fight, although I will admit it is very odd that it is so high up on the card.
Yeah, it is a really tricky one, and if you look at it for Kenny Zechku, again, he is a southpaw, he's got 83 inches of reach, something that you love to see, especially in the division. He's going to have a big gap there when it's compared to Danilo Marquez. So, can Marquez kind of bridge the gap? Is he able to get the takedown? Is he able to get the submission? Listen, before even giving out the odds and the topology predictions, I think so. He's a guy that really takes guys down in unorthodox and odd ways. He has really nice trips. If I do look at the odds, this opened as a pick'em. So both guys at a minus 115. Marquez, a slight underdog, minus 101. For Kenny and Zechku, he's right now a minus 122. Over on Tapology, 70% of the fans, 869 total votes, have in Zechku to get the win, 79% by knockout. For the 30% that are Marquez, 58% by submission. And again, I've had weird reads on these two guys in the UFC, but I have oddly liked what I've seen out of Marquez in those last two fights. Now, I have to preface it by saying, or really finish it, punctuate it by saying, Hadis Ibrahimov had an awful UFC run. Like, terrible. Yeah. Like, Zalim Imadiyev, Hadis Ibrahimov, I went, yes, these guys are going to be great, and they were terrible. Good win for Marquez. Slow Mike, this is another fight where we get to see where both of these guys are at. You don't go and get a win in this fight and then end up in a fight against like a Magomed Ankalaev. You still have a while to build your way up. You probably don't even get a top 15 fighter with a win right here unless you have an amazing win and a great call out. But for me, I like Danilo Marquez in this one. What are you thinking?
I can't disagree with the thing you just said, but I am ever so slightly going to pick Kennedy in this fight. I do think that if he can defend some of those early takedown attempts, he has the slightly better cardio out of these two fighters. And if he can keep this fight on the feet, which is a very hard ask to do, because like you said, Marquez has very unorthodox trips and takedowns that he does like to go to, so Kennedy's going to have to watch his P's and Q's and really make sure that, hey, you got to keep this fight in the center of the cage or all the way up against the cage and not let him take your back. Because that's really what I see. Like, Marquez isn't a guy who's really going to waste minutes on the ground. He's going to try to pass position to go for the submission very early. So if you're a guy like Kennedy, you really got to make sure that you're not taken down with like 4 minutes left in the round. If you're taken down, do it with like a minute left in the round and hopefully you can work your way back up to your feet or at least not give Marquez enough time to submit you. So with all that being said, ever so slightly going to pick Kennedy in this fight.
Matt going with Kennedy and Chekwu to get the win. I'm going with Danilo Marquez. I can't wait for this one. Let us know down below in the comment section who you're going with in this fight. Matt, we have two big fights left. You're not going to want to miss them. Both of them a heavyweight. Bozer, OSP. You've got Cyril Gane taking on Alexander Volkov. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Big time fight coming up this weekend at lightweight. We have the former featherweight king, and I say that with a little bit of a grain of salt. And Hato Moicano, he's taking on Jai Herbert, the black country banger, coming out of Wolverhampton. Go Wolves. I'm not a Wolverhampton fan. I actually like Tottenham. And then I just probably lost a lot of the viewers right there, so apologies where they are necessary. But Matt, for Jai Herbert coming into the UFC, you knew how good he was going to be. I mean, this guy has excellent Muay Thai. He's a very, very accredited striker. He took on a really, really good level of competition over with Cage Warriors, their former champion. And I mean, you look at the loss. Reese McKee back in 2016, you might snicker. You might go, Craig, Matt, Reese McKee sucks. He was awful in the UFC.
He's not great.
You were right about his UFC run, but back with Cage Warriors, he was pretty good. And he went on a tiny little run. And I bet you he'll end up back in the UFC before you know it. But you look at that, he comes back, he picks up big wins. Joe McColgan's a big win. Steve O'Keefe's a big win. Jack Grant's a big win. Ken Carrizosa, former UFC fighter? You like to see it, but again, former champion from the organization that's produced a lot of really good talent. Lightweight champ back in 2019. Beats Ken Carrizosa, where he's a minus 185 favorite. And then he was originally supposed to take on Mark Jacasey back in, early last year. That card canceled due to the pandemic. So he ends up with old Masaranduba. And Matt, Masaranduba gonna Masaranduba and Herb Dean gonna watch.
Turns out 40-year-old men can still beat up people? I don't know if that's the tagline, but still, for Jai Herbert, it was weird because Cage Warriors normally brings over top tier talent when they do make their way over to the UFC. I don't want to say all the time, but for the most part, when Cage Warriors champions come to the UFC, they normally have at least a good run in them or an entertaining run in them. I understand there's been some exceptions out there, but for the most part, Cage Warriors have brought in a lot of top tier talent. Look at Mason Jones, for instance, former Cage Warriors champion. now losing via no contest, so maybe not the best fighter I could have brought up. But besides that, for John Herbert, I had high hopes for him coming into the UFC. And against Massa Manduba, I just kind of expect him to win easily. Because, listen, you're fighting a 40-year-old at 155. I know Trinaldo missed weight, but again, and that really, I thought, okay, that just plays more into Herbert's going to win. You have an older guy. He's not really training that much. He's not going to be there. No one was more surprised than me when Massa Manduba landed that overhand left. It was one of the nicest punches you're ever going to land in a fight. He flatlined poor Jai Herbert. And Herb Dean, who is sometimes good at his job, but sometimes not, we have to be critical of him when he isn't, was not doing his job very well that fight. Jai Herbert ate quite a few shots after the bell, and they were super unnecessary. And for me, that's the question mark around Jai Herbert. I don't want to steal any of your thunder, Craig, because you kind of brought this up before we started filming. So if you want to get rid of this, let me know. Jai Herbert doesn't have a great chin. And for me, that's a really big concern. When he does take on guys, and listen, Renato Boicano is not the type of guy who can go out there and really take advantage of it. Renato Boicano is a crisp striker. Technically, he's a very good one, but Renato Boicano is not a guy who goes out there looking to knock you out. He doesn't throw punches looking to, wow, I'm going to knock you down like a Vanderlei Silva. I was looking at Renato Boicano and comparing more of like a Michael Bisping, where if he does knock you out, it's going to have to be by accumulation. And Boicano's weird because he doesn't even have a single TKO victory on his record for being a decent striker. It's weird. For Boicano, he has other skill sets that you really appreciate and you look for when you want to talk about a top-tier fighter. It's just, he seems to lack all the strange, like, little intangibles that you talk about when you do talk about this top 10, top 5 fighters. But it is wild that Renato Boicano, A, has a win over Calvin Kattar, B, headlined a UFC event against the Korean Zombie, and C, has fought Jose Aldo. Like, the UFC has given Renato Boicano plenty of opportunities to really be a headliner type of, or headlining type of a fighter. He even fought Brian Ortega, to bring up another guy. Like, he's fought those A-list.
Beat him.
Exactly. He's fought those A-list fighters. He just always seems to come up short when he does fight the top tier fighters.
Jai Herbert, it's just unfortunate because he left the belt with Cage Warriors. Did he leave the chin? I just look at that fight, and if you look at Jai Herbert, he comes out of Renegade Jiu-Jitsu. We talked about that gym so much because Aiden Lee just fought Aaron Pico. He lost. You had Tom Breeze, who didn't make it to the octagon for his last fight. Very unfortunate. I really like watching Tom Breeze fight, so it sucked. Fabian Edwards and Leon Edwards, and for Jai Herbert, well, he had the chin of the Massa Manduba fight, like, fifth round Leon Edwards in his last fight. So you look at that gym, all sorts of great talent, oozing with talent. I can't stress that enough. For Jai Herbert, I know exactly how good his striking is. Is he able to make some leaps and gains and bounds in his wrestling and his jiu-jitsu department to take on Moicano? Because, again, Moicano's a crisp striker, but we've seen the chin kind of falter lately. Again, he has 4 losses in his career. 3 of them are in his last 5 fights. Loses to Aldo by TKO. Loses to Korean Zombie by TKO really early. And lost to Fazib by TKO where...
If you're going to get knocked out by any 3 men, though, who weigh between 145 and 155 pounds, those would be the 3 that are probably going
to
do it.
Can't say I took Fazib to win in that fight against Moicano. So full transparency. But again, for Moicano, you look at it. Almost beat Brian Ortega until he didn't.
And beat Calvin Kattar.
You look at the recent wins. He submitted Cub Swanson. Well, that hardly ever happens. He submitted Demir Hadzevich. Well, that happens. But it was just the way that it did. It was so slippery. It was so slick. For Moicano, again, the ceiling's there. And at 55, it looked great against Hadzevich the one time. But then it regressed against a really good striker and a kickboxer in Fazeev. You got a great Muay Thai at a Jai Herbert. Maybe something kind of jives there. I just want to bring up the odds because for Moicano, he opened a minus 190 favorite. He's a minus 247 right now. For Jai Herbert, open a plus 165. He's a plus 198. And if we have a look at the Tapology votes, they're a surprise to us as they are to you. Yikes. 964 total votes, 79% Moicano, 53% by submission for the 21% that have Jai Herbert to win, 72% by knockout. Makes sense?
It does. Now, first thing that I just got to get out of the way, let's never compare Fazeev and Jai Herbert ever again. Just very different fights.
Strikers,
but Fazeev is like that guy when it comes to pure striking at 155. And for Herbert, listen, he does have some of the intangibles when it comes to grappling. I don't think he can go out there and out-grapple Renato Moicano, though. And with Moicano, it's weird, because again, we talk about his striking, and I feel like the striking is at the forefront of his skill set, but most of his wins do come by submission, and even like split decision. He's a guy who has found himself, especially earlier on in his career, in oddly close fights, but I will say that the little run that he went on with the wins over Kattar and and Swanson, like, that was the fighter who you thought, okay, maybe he can go on a really long run. I like the leg kicks in the Kattar fight, I like his counter boxing in the Kattar fight. I think if we get that same version at 155 at any point, then Renato Boicano could find himself in the top 15 again, But it's really hard for me to say that we're ever going to see that version. Listen, I think he's going to beat Jai Herbert this weekend. That'll be my official pick. But I don't really know where we go with Moicano, because it feels like the UFC has marketed him. They have given him a lot of opportunities to kind of not be a face at 145 or anything, but at least be a guy who, hey, on short notice, we need a main event or a co-main event slot. Not to Moicano can fight ranked fighter X, and we can fill that. He hasn't been able to live up to those aspirations yet, and that's the only hesitation I have with my prediction for this fight.
You look at it for Moicano, I mean, you can't go anywhere but up when you beat Tom Ninamaki, one of the best to ever do it. But Matt, I'm in agreement with Hanato Moicano. It is a really tricky fight to go with, but yeah, I mean, if you're Jai Herbert and you beat Hanato Moicano, you're fast-tracking yourself. You're going to get a better fighter than, well, the name of Moicano, or even somebody that was in the skill level of a Master Anduba. You're into a big fight your next time out, so I can't wait for this one. But going with Brazil's Moicano to get the win, I think, again, everything combined is going to be a little bit of a difference maker here, but if Herbert's able to finish him and finish him early, maybe you like that under, whether or not your book has it set at 1.5 or 2.5, maybe you have a look at that one. We'll talk about that on Question Mark Kick. So make sure you check back in, especially for this fight on Saturday, but both of us right now at the start of the week going with Hanato Moicano to get the win. Can't wait for this main card. Big fights. Danilo Marquez taking on Fortis MMA's Kennedy Nzechukwu. You also have in the main event Ciryl Gane taking on Alexander Volkov. You're not going to want to miss that. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, and as we always say, let's get into it. If you thought I was fired up for some of these fights on this card, you're right, and I'm fired up for this fight, Matt. We have a bit of a mismatch of a fight, because for the Dirty Bird Tim Means, who was originally supposed to take on Hot Chocolate Danny Roberts, well, not that long ago. Like, last week, he was supposed to be taking on Danny Roberts. Roberts unable to make the walk, and for Nicholas Dalby, he was supposed to take on Russian powerhouse Sergey Kandashko. I was really looking forward to the fight. Kandashko had been away for a really long time. It should have been a good fight. Now these two guys get paired up, and it's weird because for Nicholas Dalby, I could kind of play a little bit of a game. I could play the same game that the UFC decided to play with Timur Valiyev his last time.
It's a dirty game.
For Nicholas Dalby, his last loss was a split decision for the Cage Warriors title against Carlo Pedersoli back at Cage Warriors 93 in 2018. And since then, he's beaten Robert Allegretti. He's beaten Philip Mulpeter. He's beaten Alex Lahore. He's beaten Alex Oliveira. He's beaten Daniel Rodriguez. And he has two no contests. The first one was one of the craziest fights you're ever going to see in your entire life against Bellator's Ross Houston. I don't know the status of Bellator Europe. They catch a lot of flack for it on Twitter. But it's an amazing fight where they don't actually use a canvas. They use, a vinyl-type material.
Almost.
Ultimately, it was ended because there was too much blood. So, again, for that one, makes sense as a no contest. It was a really close fight. But he also has a no contest against Canada's Jesse Ronson from back in 2020. First round loss due to a rear naked choke. Now, if we look at the odds for that fight, it's always fun to play this game.
Wow.
He's a -315 favorite. Ronson won a performance bonus. Ultimately overturned to a no contest. Jesse Ronson serving USADA suspension for that one. So really, Nicholas Dalby didn't lose, but yeah, he lost in emphatic fashion in the first round. So when you go back and you watch his next fight, it was back in November last year. He was a +265 underdog against my guy, D-Rod, Daniel Rodriguez. And in that fight, Rodriguez pushed the pace. He landed the strikes. He fought a really good fight. And Nicholas Dalby won the fight. And again, you can go back and watch it. We can argue till the cows come home. But the fact is, Dalby won the fight by getting outstruck 83-50 in terms of significant strikes, 105-58 in terms of total strikes. I was so surprised by that decision. I wanted to throw my keyboard through the TV, but I digress. Nicholas Dalby is on a win streak, if you want to consider it that way. The Dirty Bird's 3-2 in his last five, and he was getting ready for a fight against a primary striker in Danny Roberts. This fight is really interesting.
Full transparency, I thought Tim Means could beat the brakes off Danny Roberts last weekend because, stylistically, Danny Roberts does a lot of the things Tim Means does. It's just I thought Tim Means does those things slightly better. And this fight, I don't look at this fight as being like, wow, Tim Means has to get ready for this completely different opponent. Like, Tim Means' gameplay could pretty much be the exact same for this fight as it would have been last weekend. You still need to box. You still need to be very heavy with your volume, have good takedown defense. And It's weird because I'll get this out of the way right now. I see this fight almost as a grappler versus a striker matchup, and I'd love to get your opinion on this because, personally, I don't think Nicholas Dalby can strike with Tim Means in this fight at all. I really don't. I don't think he can keep up with him volume-wise, and I think he's going to struggle a little bit with the power of Tim Means, especially if Means is able to land multiple shots in combination. For Dalby, he does have decent offensive wrestling. Again, he's not the greatest grappler once he does hit the mat, but he's a good guy on top. Do you think Nicholas Dalby's going to have to go for takedowns in this fight? Because, again, the way I see this fight is, as long as Tim Means is on the feet, constantly rolling downhill with his combinations, I don't really know what Nicholas Dalby can do to stop him, because for Dalby, he doesn't have that, like, top-tier power that you need to hurt a guy like Tim Means, and I don't see him as having, like, top-tier wrestling or any submission skills that go there and finish Means early.
For Nicholas Dalby, I mean, none of the stats really jump out at you. You look at it, negative strike differential, 3.2 strikes landed per minute to 3.57 taken or received, and the thing is, for Dalby, he's one of those guys with two different UFC stints, and for the longest time, if you went to, what, UFC 227, when Darren Till fought Tyron Woodley, well, really, for Darren Till, his only close fight was against Nicholas Dalby, true, as crazy as that might sound. That one is, of course, a draw. For Dalby, again, he has that draw. He has a split decision win over Elize Uzelski before that.
6 years ago.
And then he lost to Zach Cummins, he lost to Peter Sabati, he lost to Carlo Pedersoli with Cage Warriors, and now he's on this win streak, this tidy little win streak. So, again, I do look at it as Dalby. He's the more forward pressure type of guy in terms of that wrestling offensive. You saw that in the fight against Alex Oliveira when he came back. That was a hometown game. That was a card close by in Denmark. It was really important to get him on that one. And that was short notice, too. So,
also a weird fight, if we're being completely honest.
It was kind of closer than you'd want for a Nicholas Dalby fight. But, again, Dalby has all the tools, but can he bring them in? Against Jesse Ronson, he didn't. Against Daniel Rodriguez, he did enough to convince the judges, and that's all that matters. So we get a weird fight in this one where Tim Means, much more forward pressure, much more volume-oriented in terms of striking. He lands those nasty elbows when things are in tight. He lands really nice knees. He's 37. Nicholas Dalby's actually 36. And that's a really weird thing.
That's what I was actually going to say. It feels like a lot of the times we do talk about Tim Means, it's not like we talk bad about his skills or anything. It's just like, okay, this guy who was, like, Tim Means for the longest part of his career was one of those guys who was really, really good for an unranked fighter and would beat most unranked guys. But we did fight ranked guys, he would struggle against them. Now he's in this weird, like, they seem to be giving him prospects, and they don't really know who to match Tim Means up with at this stage of his career, because I feel like at 37, he's still oddly competitive for how old he is at this weight class, and the thing I will say is, Nicholas Dalby coming in at 36, this is going to be one of those few fights where age isn't going to be a big factor. And honestly, I look at Tim Means as the younger fighter in this fight. And I know he's got 12 losses. He's got knockout losses on his record too. It's just, Nicholas Dalby does not absorb damage well. He cuts very easily. His face reddens very, like, he's in that Alexis Davis conversation of, like, when he gets hit once, his face puffs up. If you're fighting a power puncher, you might only get hit 7 times around, let's say. And if none of those single 7 punches put you down, then the damage won't really matter. When Tim Means beats guys, he's throwing 110 strikes, 115 strikes. Like, he's really throwing a lot of accumulation. And if you are a guy who marks up easy, who cuts easy, against Tim Means, those are qualities you want to have. I think this is a tough fight from that perspective for Nicholas Dalby.
Now, if you want to spin the MMA wheel of fortune, Tim Means lost to Daniel Rodriguez. Nicholas Dalby beat Daniel Rodriguez. MMA Matt, Dalby wins this fight. But when I look at this one, the odds, Dalby opened a plus 170 underdog. He's a plus 115 right now. For Tim Means, open at minus 200, he's a minus 143. Means was getting ready for somewhat of a similar opponent, Danny Roberts. And for Nicholas Dalby, Ken Dodgeko can strike. Like, it is a matchup that makes sense on paper. The one thing that concerns me if you're hot and heavy on Tim Means is the fact that you're in the weight-cutting process, you got to stop it. For Nicholas Dalby, you were working your way down, but it wasn't fight week, so it is going to be
Tim
really
Means
interesting.
Tim Means is a fight at 155. That's like, 170's never concerned me for Tim Means because he has that career at 155, and I understand he was a guy who missed weight a couple times at 155, was forced to move up, but it's the weird thing. This is two guys who have both had two stints in the UFC. Yes, Means' second one has been much longer than Nicholas Dalby's, but still two guys who have been in and out of the organization. I thought this fight should be on the Fight of the Night screen, to be completely honest. I'm super excited for this one. I really am.
857 total votes on Tapology, 61% Dalby, 85% by decision, the 39% that have Tim Means, 76% by decision. Matt, Nicholas Dalby was one of those guys that as soon as he left the UFC, it was like, wow, like, just keep him around. He's a really good fighter, and ultimately he ended up getting that shot. In a fight like this, it's really tricky. I like Tim Means ever so slightly, so I will go with him. But I can't wait to hear the comments down below. Is that your pick, the Dirty Bird?
I think this is going to be in conversation for Fight of the Night. I really do. Like, when Tim Means fights, it's really pretty exciting. And same thing with Nicholas Dalby. I will agree with you. I do like Tim Means in this one. But this could go either way.
Really, really good fight. Both of us going with Fit NHB's Tim Means. He was training with Matt Semmelsberger to get ready for this one with a little bit of the wrestling grappling. And listen, Semmelsberger had a fun fight with Chaos Williams last weekend. I can't wait for this one, but we've got big fights on this main card. You're not going to want to miss any of the videos, so keep locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say. Let's get into it. Possible Fight of the Night coming up this weekend at featherweight. We have a couple of guys that have had lots of fights in the UFC. One guy, well, he's had two stints. That is the Pit, Daniel Pineda. And this is a guy that, when we talked to a really big prospect in the UFC, and Adrian Yanez, not that long ago, he was saying, listen, when I was on the come up, when I was thinking of becoming a martial artist in the Houston area, Daniel Pineda was the guy that we all like to watch and follow. He's coming out of 4 Ounce Fight Club, also represented in that gym. Will be Ike Villanueva on this card. Taking on Team Alpha Male's Andre Feely. Matt, what can you tell us about Andre Feely?
Andre Feely, oddly good at everything, but also not spectacular at anything. For Andre Feely, he's one of those weird fighters who, when you look at the guys who he's fought, you would assume that, wow, he's fought or he's been in the rankings for a really long time. It's weird. He fought Yair Rodriguez when neither one was ranked. He fought Max Holloway when neither one was ranked. It's kind of weird. If he had fought these guys at different stages of their careers, let's say he somehow beats Yair Rodriguez and doesn't get hit with one of the flashiest head kicks of all time, then he himself is probably in the top 15 after that. Like, it's the whole career of Andre Feely has been really weird. And I always go back to the Calvin Kattar fight because that's the fight that I really feel like Andre Feely fell off. It was Andre Feely. He beats Hakran Diaz. Okay, wow. He's finally gotten up to the point that we always thought he was going to. Now you're fighting Calvin Kattar, a guy who people have been told is good on the regional show, and that's about it. Andre Feely laid a complete egg in that fight and didn't look very good. He got outboxed consistently in that fight and he got tired afterwards. And I gotta be honest, I thought that was it for Andre Feely. I thought, okay, he was always kind of that, I don't want to throw the word journeyman on there, but you know, he'd been around for a little while, fought some good guys, and then he lost to a newcomer. And that had never really happened to Andre Feely up until that point in his career. But I gotta be honest, I feel like he did make some pretty good adjustments to his career after that. I like the volume of Andre Feely at this point in his career a lot more than I did back then. And it's weird because for Feely, it felt like the longest time the conversation was always, okay, how are we going to take this guy down? How are we going to take this guy down? He's not the worst wrestler himself anymore, and I always think back to the Dennis Bermudez fight, because for Bermudez, I get it. His last little run in the UFC wasn't the most spectacular, but at one point, he was seen as one of the best wrestlers in the 145-pound division, and the fact that Andre Feely not only beat him, but beat him by out-wrestling him was just a really impressive thing for me, at least, because I don't always put a lot of stock into who you beat and all that. It's how you beat guys at the end of the day, and if Andre Feely just went out there and hit Bermudez with 2 jabs and head kicked him, that's one thing. But the fact that he was able to out grapple such a good grappler, I thought really spoke volumes about the progression that Andre Feely's grappling has made. And that's really going to be the key for this fight, because when you look at Andre Feely, he does struggle against those top tier grapplers, but against Daniel Pineda, he is a top tier grappler, but for like 3 minutes. So in this fight, again, there's some exaggeration onto there, but this is the ultimate decision fighter versus a go for broke fighter, and I think that's why this fight's so much fun.
For Andre Feely, the last time he lost by finish, and I've seen the previews, I've seen the videos out there, I should say, on the UFC socials, they're like, look at his knockout power. He knocked out Shaman Moraes. I mean, that's cool.
He beat Mowgli.
He did beat Mowgli a long time ago, but he beat Shaman Moraes back in 2019, loses to Sadiq Youssef, beat Charles Jourdain by split. He won that fight. Like, even Charles Jourdain at the end was like, what? How is this a split? And then he loses to Bryce Mitchell. Now he's taking on Daniel Pineda. From Daniel Pineda, did I sell Wolf tickets his last time out? Am I a little bit salty about it? Yeah, because in the first round, he looked amazing against Cub Swanson. He was throwing the leg kicks. He was throwing the boxing. Until about 3 minutes and 30 seconds into the first round when he fell off a cliff. Now, he looked amazing in the fight against Herbert Burns. He looked great. And then if you go before that, really interesting, because he fought with the PFL in their second season. He beats Junior Bacon Cheeseburger, Jeremy Kennedy, first round guillotine. He beats Mavlid Haibulayev. You want to see a flashy striker? Go watch Mavlid Haibulayev when he fought one really tough out in Damon Jackson that's now in the UFC. Disgusting flying knee knockout. And then for the man himself, Daniel Pineda, he's supposed to fight Lance Palmer in the finals on New Year's Eve for the belt, for the $1 million. But he fails a drug test. So his last 2 fights are now no contest. He doesn't get to fight in the finals. Poor old Alex Gilpin. Will you answer the phone? Alex Gilpin gets to fight Lance Palmer again and loses. But for Daniel Pineda, you look at it. Before that, beats Ray Trujillo, beats Elias Rodriguez, beats Dimitri Ivey, beats Josh Davila. Finish. Oh, by the way, for Daniel Pineda, out of all of his wins, he has 9 by knockout and 18 by submission and none by decision. And of his losses, 3 by knockout, 6 by submission, 5 by decision. So, hey, the record's a little weird. The guy finishes fights. And the trouble for me, with Andre Fili, his strike differential is in the negative. Negative 3.73 strikes landed per minute.
Barely.
To 3.90 taken. For Daniel Pineda, again, 2 different stints. It is positive. Little bit better in terms of percentage that he lands, but he takes a little bit more damage. And then in terms of the grappling, a little bit of a wash. I mean, Fili, a little bit more adept. He's a little bit more forceful with his offensive, with his takedowns. But Daniel Pineda is a power wrestler. If you do see him, or a power grappler, especially in that first round. So if you like Fili to be the decision machine in this fight, I mean, hey, it could definitely happen. If you like Daniel Pineda to finish a really tough out in Andre Fili, the last time he was finished was by Yair Rodriguez back at UFC 197 in 2016. Again, Yair Rodriguez. So it is a really tricky fight to go off of. Again, I've seen a lot of support in the comment sections for Daniel Pineda in the past. I had him in my QMK parlay to beat Cub Swanson, and that really just sewered the whole thing, so it left a bad taste in my mouth. Hopefully Pineda's fixed some of the cardio issues. He is almost 36 years old. For Andre Fili, coming in 31-1 day when he walks into the cage. His debut was at UFC 166 back in 2013. Crazy to think of that. If we do look at the odds, Andre Fili is the favorite. He opened a minus 185. He's a minus 228 right now. For Daniel Pineda, opened a plus 160. He's plus 184. The Tapology votes are a surprise to us as they are to you. Holy frig. 912 total votes, 90% Fili, 73% by decision. For the 10% that have Pineda, 46% by decision, 21% by submission, 24% by knockout. The fans do not have Pineda. The gamblers do not have Pineda. Matt, do you have Pineda?
I have no idea. That's the best answer. I think Andre Fili's going to win by decision, not by submission. Goodness. Because, again, I would rather trust the guy who can at least go a hard 15 minutes over the guy who can go the hard 4 minutes, and then I'm left with a lot of question marks. And for Fili, I've seen him get out grappled, which does concern me, especially against a guy like Pineda. But he doesn't get submitted. He gets held down. He doesn't get finished. And if he can stay defensively sound long enough to start wearing at that power bar of Daniel Pineda, I do think this is a very winnable fight for Andre Fili.
It is a really, really tricky one. And again, if you do go back, you watch Pineda in his debut, he beats Herbert Burns in the second round. And if you look at Burns, he'd only lost to Mavlid Haibulayev and Magomed Adrisov. And again, Haibulayev is a special fighter, but it is a really tricky one. I like Fili in this fight, but if you can make a good argument for Daniel Pineda down below in the comments section, you let us know. Matt, we've got a very interesting slate of fights coming up on this card, UFC Vegas 30. You're not going to want to miss that main event. Cyril Gane, Le Bon Gamin, is taking on Alexander Volkov. Let's keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, as we always say.
Let's get into it.
Straight up, I mean, listen, sometimes people say, oh, Craig, you're really excited for this fight, or you oversold this fight, or whatever. This is my favorite fight of the weekend, and I'm only going to say that for this one. We have Jaime Barcelos taking on Timur Valiyev. And Matt, for Timur Valiyev, this is a guy that was like a World Series of Fighting, an occasional PFL fighter. Who is the boogeyman? Like, nobody wanted to fight him. And if you look at Timur Valiyev's overall body of work, he has a couple of losses. He lost in his debut against Ali Reberg, and then he ended up losing to Chris Gutierrez in a split decision. Nobody's better at leg kicks than Chris Gutierrez in the lower weight classes. Chris will tell you that. Andre Yule will tell you that. Who else? Cody Durden will tell you that. There's a lot of people that can say that. But for Timur Valiyev, it's the wins. There's definitely some nice ones on the record. And it's the fact that he ended up beating Chris Gutierrez in his next fight. Now, he's got a win over Bekbulat Magomedov with the PFL. And he ends up fighting with GFC a couple of times before making the move to the UFC. Now, this is back in August of last year. And he ends up fighting Trevin Jones. Now, Trevin comes in on short notice. It was originally supposed to be Valiyev and Jamal Emmers. We previewed that fight. We had Valiyev to beat Emmers. We were so excited. Jones stepped in. It's like, yeah, sure, Valiyev's going to win. Valiyev ends up walking into a power jab in tight, gets rocked, gets finished. Trevin Jones, superstar. Oh, wait. Trevin Jones tested positive for Stephen A. Smith's favorite herb that he likes to use on the commentary. The weed! And Matt, this is my trouble with Trevin Jones' last fight. They don't really talk about that so much. They don't really consider it a huge, huge win. And oh, by the way, when Timur Valiyev goes out to fight Martin Day back in February, these are direct quotes from the broadcast. This is from the intro when they're previewing the fight before the fight. They have the nice little video package. Currently on a 7-fight unbeaten streak. And then, as Timur Valiyev makes the walk to the octagon, Daniel Cormier says, and I quote, "Now his first UFC fight didn't go his way, but the fight did get overturned to a no contest due to a failed drug test. So it's almost like he starts over again." What the f***? The f***ing guy got knocked out in his UFC debut, and then he looked really good against Martin Day. He f***ing lost to Trevin Jones. Don't overlook that.
Exactly. Tell the story how it went. Like, listen, I don't care what your thoughts are on marijuana, and we're Canadian, so of course it's different up here, but like, it's not that big of a deal that you should take away and overshadow the biggest win of a guy's career just because he failed for weeks.
Now, it's still a 7-fight win streak, so yeah, you can't cry foul too much, but that's a little bit of shifty marketing.
And this is why this fight should be so interesting, I think. Because if you look at the version of Timur Valiyev that beat Martin Day, he did show why he is so good and why the hype was so real. He's extremely well-rounded. He's got great wrestling, great cardio. Like, he has everything that you really look for when you want a top prospect making their way into the UFC. The problem is that Trevin Jones fight did happen, and my problem comes down to Valiyev's chin, oddly enough. Like, the shot that hurt him wasn't a shot that would hurt a lot of guys. And listen, he was moving in on it, like you said. Like, it was just a weird... That whole fight was weird. That's what I should say, just get out of the way. Like, it was a really odd fight. And for Hany Barcelos, I feel like I bring him up more in other videos for this one factor. I bring him up for this reason. He is the fighter I think of as a fighter who, like, I wish he was 3 years younger. If he was 31 on this crazy win streak at this stage of his career, you could say, like, okay, in the next 3 years, then maybe he can get to a title shot. Right now, he is outside the top 15 at 34 years of age. How ridiculous is that? Like, I cannot name 15 bantamweights off the top of my head that I think could beat Hany Barcelos. If I'm being completely honest, like, he's also extremely well-rounded. He's got great scrambles, great jiu-jitsu. His stand-up has reached another level, too, which is another big thing. It's something that you kind of have to bring up with both guys. Both these guys were once something, but have since developed into really well-rounded fighters, and that's the really interesting thing about this fight.
For Timur Valiyev, the background, it's really something special. Brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under Ricardo Almeida. He trains out of the Nick Cantone MMA gym, so you're gonna see Mark Henry, you're gonna see Frankie Edgar's, beat Magomed Sharipov at one time training out of that gym. That's the thing. If you lump people from a certain region together, I mean, listen, Kazakhstan has better prospects than Canada at this point. And if you look at the region of the world that Timur Valiyev is from in Dagestan, listen, not every fighter from Dagestan is the same. It's the same as Canadian fighters, Kazakhstan fighters. Doesn't matter where you're from. But if you look at it for Valiyev, somewhat similar to Azabit and not as big of a wrestler. He's got the wrestling credentials, but he's a very flashy striker too. Master of sports in Sambo, international master of sports in Pankration. You love to see that out of Valiyev. For Barcelos, great ground game. Really, really, really good striking. But the important thing for Barcelos is if you go through the record, look at the fights that he was booked in that fell out, and that really tells the story. His last loss was at RFA 14. He got finished by submission against Mark Dickman. But after that, he's won and won again and again. Wins in RFA over Bobby Moffitt, former RFA champ, it was Barcelos. Beats Dan Moret. That one holds up. Beat Kurt Hollebaugh, beat Chris Gutierrez, finished him. Listen, again, Timur Valiyev lost him and then ended up beating him. Beat Carlos Joaquin, okay, cool. Beat Syed Nurmagomedov, big win. Beat Khalid Taha. But again, the names. Syed Nurmagomedov, they had to shuffle the fight around. He was supposed to fight Cody Stamann. He was supposed to fight Merab. He was supposed to fight Marcelo Rojo. That was a short-notice turnaround because he was originally supposed to fight Rafael Asuncion, that's way up in the rankings. That's how much stock the UFC has in Barcelos, but they also have enough stock to really sell you a story, weave you a tale about Timur Valiyev. Both of these guys mean a lot to this division, and that's why you should care about this fight.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, and I really do see a bright future for whoever wins this fight, because I think Hany Barcelos is a very high ceiling in this division, and Timur Valiyev is able to beat him, then he kind of takes all that hype, and The problem again with Valiant is I do have such a sour taste in my mouth from them, and I think it's so funny that you brought up the broadcast. It's just kind of funny how that's what they tried to spin the story. Just say he's a really good fighter. It's a lot better that way. For me, I like Honey Barcelos in this fight because of his ability to scramble. I actually look at this fight, and I do think he's going to have to rely on that ability quite a bit because for Barcelos, he likes the same range that Valiant does. He likes that sort of longer range because Barcelos is weird. He is primarily a puncher. He will throw some kicks, don't get me wrong, but he's a very long-range puncher when he throws. He does get a lot of whip onto his shots, so he does stand at kind of a kicking range for Valiev, so I do think it's going to come down to those in-betweens for Barcelos. Can he get into scrambles? Can he go to the clinch effectively? Can he mix his martial arts, I should say? I think he will be able to do that, and again, when we talk about Barcelos and the guys we're supposed to fight, like the half-fellow sunset of the world, like, that's who I expect him to be in there with after this fight. For Valiev, again, I think this could be a rematch where we see both guys, like, in that 10-ish area one day. I really do. I just don't think he'll have enough to beat Barcelos this weekend.
Really sneaky fight. Barcelos open a -150 favorite. He's a -220 run right now. For Timur Valiev, maybe you like the value on Valiev? Open to +130. He's +177 right now. Over on Tapology. Yikes. 940 total votes, 85% Barcelos, 76% by decision. For the 15% that have Valiev, 70% by decision. I think that the opening odds made a lot of sense. I think the fan votes are a little skewed. I'm eager to know what the fans are thinking because this is one that I've kind of had a tough time trying to figure out and to try and offer up a prediction. I like Honey Barcelos ever so slightly, but this is a fight where if I woke up on Saturday and Valiev won, I wouldn't be overly surprised. And listen, full transparency, this one's a really tricky card to try and pick if you're trying to make picks. So I am ever so slightly going with Barcelos, but it's a tricky one.
We would not have put this as a fight of the night if we thought it was going to be a one-sided just beat down by Barcelos. Like, we do think this is going to be a fun competitive fight for as long as it lasts. But at the end of the day, I do have to agree with you and pick Barcelos.
Matt, both of us going with Honey Barcelos to get the win, bringing the fight back to Refit Pro Fighters. Pedro Hizo, is he going to be able to go 2-0 on the night with Alves and Barcelos? We'll find out, but I absolutely love this card. Up at the top, Francis Cyril Gon, Le Bon Gamin, is taking on Drago Alexander Volkov. Absolutely love the fight. You're not going to want to miss that video, so make sure you check it out. Check it out. Check around. Don't check around. Stick around. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, and as we always say, let's get into it. Summer's coming, and hotter days are just around the corner. Keep cool with the help from our friends at Manscaped, who just launched their fourth generation performance package, which includes the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right. The 4.0 complements your summer grooming routine with a trim from the leaders in male grooming. The sun is shining, and listen, it's calling your name, fellas. Join the 2 million men and over who trust Manscaped and get ready for summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping by going to manscaped.com/FNP. That promo code is FNP. Now, Matt, listen, we've all been there. We've either hurt ourselves while shaving or, like I was last weekend, camping in apparently a nondescript location. I was at Fundy National Park. I had a great time.
Beautiful area.
I wore this shirt, and I wore it on, what, 3 shows, I think? Our show, the STMP MMA show, Early Stoppage.
He's like Peter Griffin. He just has a closet full of that shirt.
Well, Sam's Quan shirts. But the best part of the weekend was when I pulled out of my toiletry bag the Crop Reviver, and the guys went, what? And I said, listen, not going to have a shower. We filmed our show, and I just spritzed a couple of the old bombs of the Crop Reviver, and I was good to go for a day of hiking and enjoying my time camping, and it was great. And then I also threw on a little bit of the refined cologne, and hey, it made the experience that much better. You just throw it in the air, you waft through it, and then you're going to have a great day. For me, it worked on the campground. I smelled less like Sam Squanch and more like Craig Allen, the refined guy that I am. But listen, it's time to bundle up, and if you pick up the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0, you're going to get those great things that you know and love. Now, the refined cologne, that one's not included, but you can pick it up over there as well. You're going to find the Crop Reviver. You're going to find the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant. Maybe I should have brought that with me, but I didn't. I should have. You're also going to find, look at that, I've got it. It's great. The Lawnmower 4.0. Now, it's got the LED light. You'd have a hard time nicking your nuts with this puppy. But the best part about it, especially if you're going on a trip like I did, triple tap it right on there. 1, 2, 3. You're going to see that light. 1, 2, 3. Now the travel lock's engaged. And if you've ever traveled and you've run the battery out of a shaver, like I know I have quite a few times, it just sucks. The basic way to get it back, you tap it once, you're going to get nothing. It's not going to do anything. You wait for it to do its thing. One, two, three. Bing, bang, boom. And look, we're back in business.
Are we?
We're back in business. See? It's that simple. So, make sure you head on over there. Lawnmower 4.0. It's the goat of all men's body trimmers. You're also going to get the weed whacker. And if anybody out here never believes me...
Getting deep.
Do you hear that? Craig Allen does actually have a nose hair problem, and the weed whacker is the perfect solution. Again, I bought the cheap trimmers before, and I've always had issues with them from the big box stores. I ended up with a Manscaped perfect package, and it's worked out really, really well for me. Again, nice new charging stand. You pop that on the vanity. You got friends over. You got family over. They're going to go, what's that? Where can I get it? Manscaped.com. Use the promo code FNP. You're going to get 20% off. And listen, all sorts of great products over there. If you order that perfect package, you're going to get two free gifts. You're going to get the Manscaped Boxers, which I have on me right now, a little bit of chonk. And then you're also going to get the Shed. This is the toiletry bag that you at home need. You want to bring that Shed travel bag with you, but you also want to bring your comfort and boxers to another level. So get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com/FNP. Great. At manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping by going to manscaped.com/FNP. At manscaped.com. Stay fresh this summer and shine with Manscaped. Matt, we have a big slate of fights still to come. You're not going to want to miss any of them. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it. Really interesting mix and match co-main event. We have OSP Ovince St. Preux, former title challenger at 205 pounds, making the move back up to heavyweight to take on Tanner the Bulldozer Bowser. And Matt, for Canada's Bulldozer, this is a guy that way back on, what was it, not that long ago, June 5th, put out a tweet, screen capped it, put it on Instagram, so I'll read the tweet for you. At UFC underscore CA, that's UFC Canada up here, you know, us hosers. At Dana White, at McMaynard, at Sean Shelby. Let me fight out the last fight on my contract in July. I'm not hurt, and I'm pissed off. And then, for the Instagram comments, or Instagram post rather, f*** it all. Give me my last fight. I'll either win or I'll go home. At UFC Canada, at UFC, at Dana White, at McMaynard 2. F*** it all, period.
Direct quote.
Yeah, direct quote. So, Tanner Bowser fought Aleer Latifi, lost to Aleer Latifi. You can make an argument either way. Did I pick Latifi to beat Bowser? Yeah, I did. But does it matter now? No, it doesn't. For Bowser, it's really weird, right? You look at the 5-on in, and let's just focus on his UFC run. Beats Daniel Spitz, the old tarantula. Loses to Ciryl Gane in a back-and-forth fight. Very technical. Beats Felipe Lins, looks amazing, knocks him out in the first round, superstar, put him on Panini Prism cards. Beats Rafael Pessoa on the ground by ground and pound, that's great, you love to see it. Loses to Andrei Arlovsky, very close fight, scored it for Bowser on first watch, second, third watch, scored it for Arlovsky. Loses to Aleer Latifi by split decision, again, close. I had it for Latifi, even watching it, maybe a little bit of bias in there, but that's the way the cookie crumbles in those 6-on in. Before that, he fought a really high level of competition over with M1 Championship, over with ACB, against some of the names, former UFC fighters, Chase Gormley,
he
DJ Linderman.
45.
He fought Denis Smoldarev, he fought Vakayev, he fought Rakeem Cleveland, he fought Tony Lopez, who's a stepping stone for a lot of UFC fighters. But for Tanner Bowser, you know exactly what you're going to get. Crisp footwork, good in and out movement, good head movement. And he throws a lot of nice volume. He's a tricky fighter for a lot of people to figure out. Arlovsky was able to do it. Latifi was able to do it with the takedowns. Typically, the takedown defense of Bowser is good. And the weird thing that we saw to Tanner Bowser from fight over fight, from loss to loss, against Andrei Arlovsky, weighed in at 232.5. He was always known as one of the smaller heavyweights. Then his last time out, weighs 242 against Latifi. And the question that we had before that fight was, did he gain the weight to try and stuff the takedowns, to have that added bit of chonk on there to kind of discourage the takedowns? Well, if he did, it didn't work.
Because they should spend less time at the buffet line and more time wrestling practice.
That's a joke, because physically he looked good. Exactly. Like, he looked like he packed on muscle, not fat. Like, he did look really good. And again, he had from November last year to get into the fight that was just a couple of weeks ago against Latifi. But now you're pissed off and you want to fight out your contract. He said July, the UFC said June, and you get Ovince St. Preux that missed weight his last time out, weighed what, 207.5, and ended up losing to Jamahal Hill. And then he's supposed to fight Max Griechen at 205 on this card. Griechen out due to visa issues, what I was hearing. The source there, the Anakin Florian podcast that I listened to today. So no Griechen. Griechen kind of fights like Bowser, so it's kind of neat.
If anybody tells you that they have a good read on this fight, they're lying to you. And I'm telling you this right now. Not a single person on planet Earth knows how this fight's going to go. I know what Tanner Bowser does well, and I know what Ovince St. Preux does well. It's so hard for me to even start to try to give you a basis for a prediction on this fight, because for OSP, he does like to move backwards like he's Tyron Woodley at light heavyweight, even at heavyweight. Like, he's got that weird, I'm going to have my back to the cage, it forces my opponent to engage with me, I'm really like... He acts almost like disinterested in the fight, almost like a la Nate Diaz, not really like hands on knees or anything, but still, he'll just kind of move all weird, and then all of a sudden, like Yoel Romero, explode, and if he does hit you with one of those big shots, you're going to go down. We talk a lot about Ben Rothwell, for better or for worse, on this channel, but one thing Ben Rothwell has is a really, really good chin. Like, it's hard to even put him down, and Ovince St. Preux, to his credit, at least when he did hit Ben Rothwell, was able to put him down in that fight. I understand he lost a close decision, but the things that he showed in that fight are at least weapons that should be open when he fights Tanner Bowser, because Tanner Bowser and Ben Rothwell, I understand physically they are slightly different. Ben Rothwell about as big as a heavyweight can get, whereas Tanner Bowser, like you had said, for the longest part of his career, we were almost talking about him moving down to 205 if anything, and now that he's around that 240, it'll be interesting to see how he matches up with OSP, because even when OSP fought Ben Rothwell, he didn't seem that small for a heavyweight. I don't worry about his size in this fight, because like you had said, he's missed weight at light heavyweight. Now he basically is a heavyweight. I look at OSP, he's not like Rampage fighting Fedor out of shape and can't make 205, but he's kind of at like where Rampage was. When Rampage was young, he could make 205, but as his body started to get bigger, he's sort of too big for 205 but too small for a heavyweight. Like, Ovince St. Preux is one of those weird in-betweeners in this division, and I think this will be at least an entertaining fight, because Bowser does tend to move forward sometimes, and that's what I'm about to get to here in a second. For Tanner Bowser, it felt like up until those two knockouts that he had, we talked about his volume, we talked about his cardio, then he got those two knockouts, and it's like, okay, do you knock people out now, or are you going to go back to being what we knew you as, that heavy volume puncher who just well-rounded and had great leg kicks? I don't know if Tanner Bowser has it in his head that he is a really good knockout puncher, so maybe he doesn't have the same level of volume because he thinks, okay, if I'm able to connect with these guys, they'll go down. Again, I'm not trying to put myself in his head, I'm just saying, for Bowser, it's odd. We used to talk about how great his volume was in his fights, but in his last two showings, it just hasn't been there.
For Tanner Bowser, way back in 2018, when all of this was nothing, and it was just an audio-only podcast.
Different house, even.
He was one of our first guests. One of my first guests on the podcast. And it was great. Like, he was just letting it fly off the cuff. Go back and listen to it. I don't want to go to the UFC. I don't care about the UFC. I'm fighting some of the best guys over here. And he was fighting really good competition at the time. And in the UFC, it's been a really weird run. So, you had a full training camp at 265 to fight a former light heavyweight in Latifi. You lose by split decision. Now, again, I bring this up just about every week, but a Canadian music reference, it's got nothing to lose when no one knows your name, and the training camp's weird, because for Bowser, honestly, I should know, but I don't know, because we live in a giant country, but he went from Vegas, went back to Canada, and then now he's flying back to the States to get ready for a fight against OSP, who, again, was going to fight Max Griechen, prodding striker, throws nice kicks, he's a decent light heavyweight. I thought he beat Dustin Jacoby's last time out. The Hanyak's got a really weird fight coming up, and we'll talk about it as the time flies in his next one. But in this one, it is an odd pairing. If you have a strong feeling either way, again, I couldn't stress that enough.
You're full of shit.
Let us know what you're thinking, too. But Bowser got ready for a grappler, a guy that's going to wrestle you. Both of these guys have lost to Aleir Latifi. OSP got finished. Bowser lost the decision. For OSP, the 5-on-in, it's 2-3. The loss is to Krylov. Beat Mikhail Olshishuk. He loses to Ben Rothwell by split. He beats Lonzo Menafield by knockout in a fight he was losing until he wasn't. And then he ends up losing his last time out to Jamal Hill. Again, it was like young versus old. Southpaw long prodding striker against, again, the same thing. It was fighting in a mirror. This is a really tricky one, Matt. If we have a look at the odds, OSP open to -105, he's +138. Tanner Bowser open to -115, he's a -167. The topology votes, maybe unsurprisingly, have the heavyweight as the guy who's more likely to win. 866 total votes, 64% Bowser, 36% St. Preux. 53% of the Bowser fans have him to win by knockout. 34% of the St. Preux fans have him to win by submission. Matt, it's a weird co-main event. What's the pick?
I know you take a lot of flack because you seem to never pick Canadians on this channel, whereas myself, I seem to pick a lot of Canadians on this channel. I can't do it this time, though. I didn't like what I saw from Boozer in that Latifi fight, and you brought up a few times that I think we should make a bigger point of it. The overlap between Grecian and Tanner Boozer is pretty heavy. Like, their skill sets do mirror each other quite heavily, whereas if you look at Tanner Boozer and you just have to assume, okay, the majority of the training camp he has for this fight is just the overlap of, like, how good of shape he was in to the Aliyu Latifi fight. All your game planning has to basically go out the window because Aliyu Latifi and OSP share nothing in common. They fight for different stances. One's a wrestler. One's this weird, like, backwards walking striker. So I do like OSP ever so slightly in this fight, even though he is the epitome of an inconsistent UFC fighter.
Listen, OSP has a negative strike differential. He's more active with the takedowns. I can see that being the difference. Again, if OSP goes into this fight, like, Alistair Overeem when he fought Augusto Sakai, that's the way you win. Dump those weird takedowns from in close, get him down to the mat, and try and work some of your game, because Levin St. Preux is one of the funnest guys, if funnest is a word, to watch kind of float from guard, from half. He's a really fun fighter to watch that way. If it's a striking matchup, listen, Bozer's going to have to get happy with the hands if he wants to get paid by the UFC or another organization. If this is the last fight on his deal, as he says, I'm going with the United States / Haiti's own Ovince St. Preux to get the win. And I'm really eager to see this fight because it is an odd one.
And it is interesting, too, because this is the thing. I wasn't that excited for this co-main event until that added, like, loser goes home wrinkle kind of came in. Because that's the thing. It is a very WWE selling point for a co-main event. But if Tanner Boozer is serious and he's like, listen, I'm kind of done with the UFC. I want to move on. Go do my own thing. Like, that could very well be it for him in the UFC. And listen, maybe to the wider UFC audience, they might not really care. But there's not a lot of Canadian UFC heavyweights right now. Like, I'm pretty sure he's the only one. So the fact that a Canadian UFC fighter is kind of looking to depart is sort of weird.
I mean, listen, he could take the RGN Buller route and become a one championship heavyweight champion, but really looking forward to the fight. Let us know below who you've got. Do you have our fellow Canuck Tanner Boozer? Are you going with Ovince St. Preux? We got a great fight coming up this weekend in the main event. Cyril Gane, Le Bon Gamin, he's taking on Alexander Volkov. You're not going to want to miss that video, so check it out. Keep it locked in with Fight Name Picks, and as we always say, let's get into it. Absolutely love our main event coming up this weekend. We have Le Bon Gamin Cyril Gane taking on Drago Alexander Volkov. As always, one half of your hosting duo, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FNP. And I suggest you do, because lots of questions come in throughout the week. It's tough for us to get to all of them, but make sure you find us on the socials. You can find my partner to my left, to your right, at Matt Allen FNP on the respective socials. Matt, absolutely love this one. I mean, if you look at it for Cyril Gane, he is one of the more well-rounded heavyweights and exciting fighters that we've had in the UFC in some time, especially in this division. The most interesting thing that I have to say about Cyril Gane, he made his debut back in August of 2018. It was a first-round win over Bobby Sullivan with TKO in Quebec, Canada. Alexander Volkov at that time was at the peak of his powers. He was between his win streak where he'd finished Fabrizio Verdum, but just before his fight with Derek Lewis, where he almost won it until he lost it at the very end of that fight. And it's crazy to see where these two guys have gone in their respective careers. Cyril Gane has not lost a fight, and I can't stress that enough. He's 8-0. He came into the UFC with one of the more green records that you've seen. He beat Adam Dykes, they beat Roger Souza, and then he fights Rafael Pessoa in his UFC debut back in 2019. And listen, this is where I have to go off. You've never seen somebody be as high on a prospect as I have with Cyril Gane. And I'm not pumping tires. You know, we were the Fight Night Picks where back in 2018, Brandon Moreno is going to be the flyweight champion.
I've been saying this since like 2016 before channels were invented.
That's true. But a lot of people don't know that. I mean, if you're new to the channel, we appreciate you. And that's where we have to say thank you so much for the 25,000 subscribers. It's insane where this channel's grown. But Cyril Gane was one of those fighters that we've had kind of our finger on the pulse and on our radar for some time because he was with Quebec's TKO. So he comes into the UFC, goes on a wild run, beats Pessoa, beats Dontel Mays, beats Tanner Boozer, and those are good names. And then you look at the names that they tried to match him with in 2020. Abdurakhimov, Sergey Pavlovich, Anshay Dalia, Abdurakhimov again. And then he fought Junior Dos Santos, and that was peak pandemonium. How crazy was that?
He looked phenomenal in that fight, but this is my thing about Ciryl Gane, and I always feel like I'm the wet blanket to the fire that is your hype for Ciryl Gane, because here's the thing, I really like Ciryl Gane, but I always feel like I'm the bearer of bad news. This is the one Ciryl Gane stat that never shows up in a page, but it is the absolute truth. You know who's never faced adversity once? Ever? Ciryl Gane. He's never been in a hard fight. And you can look at that two different ways. You can look at that as, wow, he is so well-rounded. He is so smart. He can get out of those situations. No fighter goes their whole career without making mistakes, though. And that's why we like MMA so much. MMA isn't boxing. You can lose and get better because of it. And people don't care. Like, Alexander Volkov didn't lose to Derek Lewis and lose to Curtis Blaydes and go, hey, I'll just stay the same fighter and never get better. No, he kept on getting better. And that's the thing about Alexander Volkov. I know we were talking about experience before we even started filming. And again, the thing about Volkov, he still gets better.
He has 33 more fights than Ciryl Gane has in MMA. Now, for Ciryl Gane, he has the kickboxing acumen outside. He has really, really good jiu-jitsu and a wrestling base thing. You don't really see all that often. And again, if you want to see a perfect fight, you have to consider the level of competition.
Exactly.
The Dante Mays fight. He beats him on the feet. And then at the end, it's like, well, you know what? I want to gain some experience. Let's just take him down and we'll put him in a heel hook. Hopefully it lands. All right, I finish him by heel hook. You don't see finishes like that at heavyweight very often. From a striker, no less.
None of that is wrong, but still, I've never seen him get hit clean, get wobbled, and then be like, okay, I can come back after that. And that's a really important thing for every fighter. I remember bringing this up, and I get a lot of flack on Twitter because of it, but I feel validated after his last performance. And it was on Greg Hardy's career, where every fighter in their progression has to face these certain skill checks. You have to face the guy who throws really good calf kicks at one point in your career. Once you get past that, then okay, you know how to deal with that, and now that's in your repertoire. Ciryl Gane, again, has never faced those techniques that have made him gone, oh, okay, I don't have this yet. I'm going to take this, and now this is mine. He's run through everybody. And if you look at the last two wins, Junior Santos lost, what, 7 fights before that? Like, JDS was at the worst losing streak of his career going into that fight. And I think we can both agree that his win over Jairzinho Rozenstruik was not an impressive win by any means. It was a good performance, but he landed, like, 5 more strikes than Jairzinho did. He was the slightly more active out of those two. He never did anything that had Jairzinho in trouble throughout that fight. And that's what I'm getting back to. If anybody finishes anybody in this fight, I can almost guarantee you it's Volkov will be the one finishing Ciryl Gane. I look at Ciryl Gane, and I'm actually going to spin this in a way that's very positive for Gane. I think his fight IQ is so high that he will almost become non-aggressive because of it. And I think against a guy like Volkov, that's really going to hurt you. What Volkov does so well is, especially now that he's gained that ridiculous 20 pounds, which, hey, USADA, don't know if you're doing your job or not, but it is a little weird when a heavyweight all of a sudden just gets super jacked and gains 20 pounds. But we saw that, okay, some guys at heavyweight, since he is 6'7", can out-muscle Volkov. We saw that in the Curtis Blaydes fight. Guys can't really do that anymore. Like, Walt Harris, listen, yes, the X's and O's, he might not be the best fighter out there, but when you look at what he was able to do to Walt Harris and just constantly march forward, march forward, march forward, and the killer instinct that Volkov has when he hurts a fighter is really good too. Like, Volkov's one of those weird guys who straddles the line between a very powerful striker and a guy who just focuses on his volume, because he can knock you out with one shot like he did against Overeem. And I understand Overeem might not have the best chin in the world, but when Volkov's a guy, and I'm going to use the same term that I did to describe Tim Means' fighting style, when he's going downhill, putting his combinations together, I don't think there's anyone in heavyweight who can deal with Volkov. Like, even look at Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis is probably fighting for a title next, and up until one last overhand right, Volkov wasn't just beating Lewis. He basically 10-8ed him for like 2.5 rounds and then gets knocked out by him. It's just, when I look at Alexander Volkov, he's been proven against the higher level of competition. He's faced adversity and come back from it. Like, even go back to the Verdum fight. He gets out grappled by Fabricio Verdum for 3 rounds, and it's not even close. Like, he's getting his back taken, he's getting swept, he's getting taken down. It's not a competitive fight whatsoever. In the 4th round, which is not a round a lot of heavyweights are able to achieve knockouts in, he was able to finally defend a takedown, hit that one beautiful combination where it was like uppercut, left hook, uppercut, and put Verdum down. When I talk about Volkov, it's not just experience. It's experience against top-level fighters, and that's really what I think is going to be the most important thing about this fight.
For Volkov, out of the losses, it's funny. You go back to when he debuted in 2009. He loses to Akhmat Sultanov. Again, you're going to gain from that. He gets submitted. He loses to Max Grecian, who's supposed to be on this card. That was in 2010. Loses to Pat Bennett, a name that people know from, again, 2010. Very, very active. Then he beats some names that you know. He beat Brett Rogers over with Bellator. He loses to Vitaly Minnikov, the champ, back in 2013 for the belt. Last time I checked, Vitaly Minnikov was pretty good. Lose to Tony Johnson by split, who, Tony Johnson, all of a sudden is a big deal in Russia fighting in heavyweight fights. Lose to Czech Congo after that, goes on a beautiful little win streak, ends up in the UFC, loses to Lewis, beats Hardy, loses to Blades, and then he has his last two fights. Wald Harris is tricky, because how much stock do you put into it? I will say this. The amount of weight that Volkov put on, and the fact that, again, credit where it's due, I listened to the Anik Florian podcast today, and John Anik had some pretty good kind of offers about Volkov. You know, wasn't able to train with heavyweights for the fight against Blades, wasn't able to work in his wrestling. I don't know if it's truth. I don't know if it's, you know, fact or fiction. If he's just saying that because he lost, I don't know. But he's looked really good in his last two fights. And that spooky, spooky tattoo that he has on his back scares the bejesus out of me when I'm sitting at home watching on my couch. Alexander Volkov's a great striker. This fight is, even with the disparity in terms of pro MMA experience, it is very well matched.
The last time we saw a main event that had this big of a an experience inequality was when Yuri Prochazka fought Dominic Reyes. Yuri had twice as many knockout wins as Dominic Reyes just had MMA fights. And again, we saw how that fight went. It was really came down to when Reyes hurt Prochazka, he knew what to do when he was hurt. He had been in those situations before and he knew, okay, he went for the takedown at one point, got on top of Reyes. He was able to get away from those dangerous situations. And the experience really did come in. It was a massive factor. And honestly, maybe that fight is clouding my judgment a little bit too much, but I'm picking Volkov not just based on his experience, but I do like the fact that he's going to bring the fight to Ciryl Gane. Ciryl Gane is yet to be in the cage with a guy who's moved forward on him. Even Rozenstruik, a lot of the time, was the one moving backwards in their fight. And Gane does have great left-to-right movement, so of course it is hard to get him pinned up against the cage. But with Alexander Volkov, and I'd love to get your opinion on this, he didn't just gain 20 pounds. I think he gained a good 20 pounds. Like, I think there's a lot of fighters in the UFC who, it's not like he gained 20 pounds and didn't get skills along with it, I guess. He gained those 20 pounds because it helps him with his punching power. It helps him defend those takedowns. And I guess it was a good career move, I should say. I like Volkov at 265 more than Volkov at 147. And I do think that this version of heavyweight Volkov is going to become champ one day. There, I
said it. So he gained 120 pounds?
No, he went from, what, 247 to 265?
Yeah, he had him at 147.
Oh, sorry. And,
I mean, you did say seven times that he gained 20 pounds, so how many pounds did he gain?
20.
He gained 20 pounds. Okay, well, there we go. Math show. But when I look at it, it is really tricky. I mean, Ciryl Gane switches stances. He offers different looks. He moves in on angles. When he strikes with volume, he does look very good. When he strikes with power, he looks great. I'm interested to see if he tries to take Volkov down. We've seen that. That's going to be the big X factor in this fight. I think skill for skill and strike for strike, Volkov might have more power in this one. Can Ciryl Gane land the volume, switch stances, move in and out of range, and once the fight kind of wears on, is he going to be able to take Volkov down? Because we know that Volkov has very good cardio. You even saw that in the Blades fight where, again, it seemed like Blades was going to get takedowns at will, that Volkov never went away.
And I want to get your one last opinion on this. Do you think Gane would go to the clinch a lot in this fight? Because it's a position that he does do very well in, but against a taller guy like Volkov, and Volkov himself has great knees and elbows, do you think that's something that Gane will kind of just not go to in his game? Or do you think he'll just have to be strategic about it?
You got
to
be strategic about it. I mean, for the MMA factory, Fernan Lopez, with Ciryl Gane, I mean, for the longest time up until the last few years, he was able to train with Francis Ngannou. That's a narrative. Again, Ngannou's been in the States for quite some time, training out of Extreme Couture and a few different gyms as well. So you get a little bit more personal attention for Gane, but we've seen this meteoric rise. Is it going to be the Rozenstruik up in a main event? We fight over him, and then we continue to go on, and then ultimately we end up losing to Ngannou. We'll see what happens. But when I looked at this one, I was kind of surprised. Gane opened a minus 135 favorite. He's a minus 173 right now. Volkov opened a plus 115. He's a plus 141. I urge you, check out the YouTube community tab, because we actually have more votes over there than they do on Tapology. The caption, heavyweight main event this weekend is top-ranked contenders face off. Who's getting the win? Number 3, Ciryl Gane, commanding 55% of the vote out of 1,500 total votes. 45% going with Volkov. If we can pick off some of the comments, we'll sort by top, Matt. And up at the top, we have Fox Spirit is saying Volkov is a very solid test. He is not a guy to take lightly. What bothers me about Volkov is he has all the physical attributes, but uses a square Muay Thai stance. It just doesn't make use of the incredible reach. And sometimes he does.
Kicks, though.
Sometimes he does. Real News MMA saying, been high on Gane since his debut. I think people aren't giving Gane the credit yet, and hopefully will if he gets it done this time. Going to be tough with the lengthy tough Volkov standing across from him, but I believe he's worth the money. And we got to hit read more. Won't see him with these odds again this time soon, Matt. I'll throw one more out there. We've got from the Rodent Resistance, 95. I think Volkov wins this one. Would be surprised if Gon wins, but he definitely can. Really looking forward to watching this one. Hopefully me in the prediction video, but ultimately the fight should be good too.
So just go back to that comment where people thought that Gon wasn't getting the credit he deserves. I'm not saying this to cover my ass, but just let me say this. Sure. Both things can be true. Like, he can beat Volkov, but still not have proven anything up until this point. Like, to me, I think Shogun's a very good fighter, but he has yet to prove to me that he is an elite fighter yet. The win over Rozenstruik was a good win, but again, he didn't beat Rozenstruik in any way that says, wow, he can beat guys in the top five.
It's one of those fights where if you have a friend that's never watched MMA before and you go, here's heavyweight MMA, I'd much sooner show them Pat Barry Czech Congo than I would Ciryl Gane and Yarzino Rozenstruik. Like, it's just the truth.
Exactly. And for Gon, that's the thing. It really does come down to, he's never faced adversity, and Volkov's going to land shots at some point. So we are really going to learn a lot about Ciryl Gane this weekend, and that's why this is exciting. Last question for you. Do they have a title eliminator?
No.
Fair enough. Okay.
Lewis is ahead of him. Jones, in terms of name values, ahead of them. Like, there's a few contenders up there that really are knock, knock, knocking on that door. Ever so slightly going with Francis Ciryl Gane, because again, when I follow a hype train, I get to this point, and then I go, I'm taking Figueiredo.
That was just about to say.
Brandon Moreno wins, so I'll be the contrarian, but I do like Ciryl Gane. Again, lateral movement, switching stances. To me, he's got that full, complete package. He's going to get tested by Volkov, and we're really going to learn something. If Volkov beats Gane, you might think, geez, well, yeah, it's just a guy that was 8-0, but ahead of him in the rankings, it really does mean a lot. So I absolutely love the fight. I can't wait for Question Mark Kicks this Saturday that will be filmed in this studio and not in the wilderness. And I won't have to wear this shirt, but this was the good luck charm for last weekend. The big Nikolai Negomarianu underdog pick hitting. All kinds of great content coming out this week, Matt. FightNightPicks.com is your hub for everything. The full card betting guides, the interviews, the post-fight stuff, all kinds of great stuff there. And you can find the merch there as well. So FightNightPicks.com. Big week for Fight Night Picks. You're not going to want to miss any of the content. So keep locked in with Fight Night Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it.